This is the Quality News Network. Federal prosecutors will investigate the destruction of CIA videotapes showing agents interrogating terrorism suspects. Attorney General Michael Mukasey announced that the Justice Department will try to determine whether any laws were broken. An inquiry found that there is sufficient evidence to pursue possible criminal charges. Presidential candidates Hillary Clinton and Mike Huckabee continue to hold narrow leads over their competitors in the run-up to tomorrow's Iowa caucuses. New Hampshire's primary is next week. A prisoner who overpowered four guards, took their weapons, and escaped from a hospital in suburban Washington, D.C., has been shot to death by Maryland State Police during their attempt to recapture him. The 45-year-old convict was serving life in prison for kidnapping, hijacking, and robbery. Kenya continues to burn as international pressure mounts for an investigation into the recent contested presidential election. The death toll in the rioting has topped 300. Meantime, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is making a round of diplomatic telephone calls to Kenyan leaders, prodding them to put a stop to the violence. Hours after Pakistan's Election Commission announced a six-week delay in the parliamentary vote, the party of assassinated former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto announced it will take part in those February 18th elections. A team of British investigators from Scotland Yard is heading to Pakistan to investigate the assassination of Bhutto. President Pervez Musharraf announced he requested that investigation. On the day she died, former Prime Minister Bhutto was scheduled to hand over a secret report on the election fraud to two prominent U.S. congressmen. She was assassinated hours before that meeting with Representatives Patrick Kennedy and Arlen Specter. The government of Sri Lanka has withdrawn its six-year ceasefire agreement with Tamil Tigers. The announcement came just after the bombing of a military bus, killing four people in downtown Colombo. Tiger rebels are suspected there. And villagers and tourists are fleeing an erupting volcano in southern Chile. The volcano began spewing ash and lava last night, authorities trying to evacuate more than 50 people stranded in a nearby national park. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
You know you can depend on QNN for honest news. Now we want you to know about an honest source of information on one of the country's most desirable vacation destinations, Carmel by the Sea on California's beautiful Central Coast. That source is the best address in Carmel, carmel.com. Just a few simple clicks and you're visiting a website that mirrors all that Carmel stands for: quality, character, tradition, beauty, the great outdoors by the sea, cultural heritage, and the best shopping, charming inns, superb dining, world-class art, music, and theater, a cornucopia of delights. So when you're planning your next getaway, go to the best address in Carmel, carmel.com, for tips on everything Carmel. Then put that information to good use by visiting Carmel by the Sea for an unforgettable getaway. Carmel.com.
The former Daimler Chrysler hit with the largest fine ever assessed against any company for violating fuel economy standards set by the U.S. government. The more than $30 million fine was levied for imported passenger cars from 2006, in particular the Crossfire. The factory sector in the U.S. shrank last month as new orders dried up. The Institute for Supply Management says the new orders index fell about 3%. Only 15% of firms reported rising orders last month. Mexico's state-owned oil company Pemex is warning production is slowing dramatically and predicts output could decline as much as a third in less than a decade. That's bad news for the world energy market in general and Mexico in particular, since the country earns 40% of its revenue from oil. The price of crude jumped to a new record today, $100 a barrel. Last year, crude oil rose nearly 58%. That's the largest jump in a decade. The price of gold also hitting new heights. Metal's value shot through its previous peak of $850 to trade at over $859 an ounce earlier today. The slipping dollar, surging oil revenues, and conflict in Pakistan cited for that rise. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average sunk 221 points to end at 13,043. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Okay! Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! For the sake of artifice and getting along, we will say that this is a new year. And I welcome you to it. I'm refreshed. I'm energized. I had an absolute orgy of college football yesterday. But I gotta let you in on something. I'm still a little bit distracted because tonight my beloved West Virginia University Mountaineers tee it up against those wagon-driving Oklahoma people. For what is apparently supposed to just be a matter of shooting fish in a barrel for the Sooners. I am hoping against hope that it is not. Kickoff is slated for roughly 8 p.m. Eastern time, so I will have to rely on those of you in the chat room and those of you communicating by email to do play-by-play for me while I'm here behind the microphone. Can we work it that way? Yeah. Because, you know, I was listening to some reruns that we had going over the holiday break, and I realized I've become quite bad at giving out the email address for any of those who might want to make contact, new listeners, that sort of thing, those sort of folks, because, you know, we're constantly expanding our reach here on the Internet, this marvelous series of tubes. And I don't give out the address as often as I should. So for those of you who might want to get in touch with the program, the email address to reach me, and this is, you know, good at any time. I try to respond on and off air. Bob, at headonradio.com. Bob at headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. The phone numbers you know as well. We can get right to the phones if you want to, or we can babble a little bit. I can babble a little bit, you know, me and that mouse in my pocket. On your own long-distance unlimited plan, it would be 304-658-5453. If you need us to pay the freight, it's 800. See how long I've been away? 877-443-2366, 877. The numeral 4, head on, if you like to spell on your, you know, telephone keypad thingy. So it's a little bit slow today. And I think that's probably a good thing because as of tomorrow, we go straight out of the holiday relaxation period and into the dead sprint all the way to November. And we're just slightly more than 365 days away, 377 or something, away from saying a certainly not fond, but God knows agonizingly waited for farewell to that pig-eyed, jug-eared little lout who occupies the White House. So there's not going to be any let-up. Don't count on it here. Don't count on it for yourself. It is going to be a dead run all the way. And of course, not just a dead run for the candidates, we're going to be up to our necks in slime and sleaze, especially once the Democratic candidate for president has been selected through the primary process. Then the Republican filth machine will gear up such as you have never imagined. And we're going to be absolutely... You thought swift voting was nasty? You thought what Lee Atwater did to Michael Dukakis was more than 15 years ago was filthy? You thought Florida in 2000 was dirty? You thought Ohio in 2004 was awful? The Republican filth machine is going to start gearing up, and I mean they're going to pump the steam to it until it fairly feels like the nation is going to split asunder. Because please remember, right-wing authoritarian pig-licking SOBs don't give a hoot about this country, and they don't care what they tear down or whom they destroy in their shameless, whorish, filthy desire to gain and retain power. Patriotism means nothing to them. Morality means nothing to them. It is all a naked greed, an unmitigated hunger without surcease to have power. And of course, more than beyond all of that, it's worth remembering that we come back from the holiday, not just on any old day. You know what tonight is.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
That's right, brethren and sistren. It is prayer meeting night here on the Head On Radio Network. I am Bishop Bob in the Cathedral of Common Sense. Come on down to the altar, lay your hands upon the subwoofer, and feel the rays of healing faith a-flowing through your mind as you become healed from the right-wing excesses of American media. Get your magic cookie and a swaller of your magic wine, and understand that common sense herein prevails. We will go straight to the phones on this prayer meeting Wednesday. Let's see who we've got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob. How you doing?
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Just a couple things before you get into your I'll call it your monologue, because guess who's going to be on Jay Leno tonight?
Oh, that would be the brother Reverend Mike Hooksterby, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I believe it would be. Yes, indeed.
Yeah, that SOB can sure cross a picket line, can't he?
Well, I just don't have anything to say about that man, other than the fact that I think he's an asshole and he's dangerous.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
But there's something I just want to share with you very briefly, and this is about, of all things, Walmart. And I had recorded before Christmas on, I think it was Encore, a program about Walmart, and it was entitled The High Cost of Buying Low.
Yes, that would be Robert Greenwald's film.
My God, I can't believe that company. And the practices they use and the way they mistreat their employees. They have spies among their people who want to ferret out any hint of union activity. If people think they're saving money by going to Walmart, they're going to pay it in taxes if Walmart doesn't, or the programs in which their employees are encouraged to participate because they're not paid a living wage.
Right.
And also, it describes the factories in China and places like that in Bangladesh as well as Honduras that supply Walmart directly, and the conditions under which these foreign workers live who make these goods for Walmart are almost they're not even humane.
No, they're barbaric. If you want to, yeah.
I mean, they had kids, people in Bangladesh brushing their teeth with ashes from the fire with their fingers because they couldn't afford a toothbrush. And also in China, they're forced to live in dormitories, and they are made to pay rent and their utilities to the company. It's like a company store type thing. And the Walton family has its own special place where they can go in case of an apocalypse, just like the president does. They have their own mount, their own Greenbrier type thing. They're a special bunker. They're flown in by special helicopters. It's the damnedest thing you've ever seen in your life. And they describe the just how hateful these people are. And, for example, they have a Walmart fund in which is for an emergency, and out of 1.5 million employees, they had contributed $5 million to it from all their employees. And you know how much the Walton family gave to it? $6,000.
Wow.
And it just went on to describe that the it made me realize, and it made me really appreciate the presence of and the effects of a union and its necessity, because these people will do anything they can to destroy a union or those people associated with it. And another thing, there are a number of cities in this country that have got together, like Inglewood, California started it, mm-hmm. and they have told them to get out. And when the Walmart people come into a city, the first thing they want to do is to destroy Main Street and make it an empty place.
And they do. They do, in large part, Jim. And everything that's in there is that you've just mentioned is absolutely the truth. You know, very few. It's hard to comprehend, but it is a fact that Walmart keeps fueled and ready to go on the tarmac at all times a Gulfstream jet.
Oh yeah, they got a fleet of them
that they will dispatch to anywhere that there is the first mention of a union coming into any of their stores.
They spent $54 million on that fleet of jets. And they come there and they have hidden cameras and all types of things that in break rooms, and they said that a lot of people are paid so little they can't even afford to bring lunch, and they just sit there, or you know, they're afraid to be taught. Their associates are afraid to talk to one another because that means, you know, they are involved in a conspiracy to do something that is against the interests of the Waltons. And, you know, it's like living in a police state working for that company.
Well, there's a reason, Jim, that I've often compared it with the old, and you might have more experience than I with this, but the old Goom department store, because that's the ultimate business model of Walmart, is to be the only business left doing business on a retail level in America. They're anti-competitive, and they want it to finally be said that if you want it and Walmart doesn't have it, you don't need it.
Well, you know, if they busted up Standard Oil and if they can break up Ma Bell, why can't they do something about Walmart?
Well, for starters, because there are people in office who don't want to do anything about Walmart, who think that Walmart is simply the bee's knees of the business world. But the problem is it's a self-defeating business model, as far as I can tell, because the more they drive down wages in the United States, the less able Americans will be to purchase their garbage.
Well, exactly. And, you know, where the money's going is going to just a few select people who are members of the Walton family. And I think each one of them is worth about $18 billion.
Last I checked, it was closer to 28, but yeah.
Right. Well, this film has some age on it. But nonetheless, if people think that they are really getting a bargain when they go there, I want them to consider the increases they're going to have to pay in taxes when a Walmart comes to a town, because all their employees are going to be put on public assistance. They never buy the land. They never pay any taxes on the land. They always lease it, so they don't have to pay taxes. And, you know, in the long term, you don't get anything cheap. You get what you pay for.
No, exactly. Exactly.
And Walmart is a false thing about bargains for most people. And they're utterly rapacious in their efforts to get their way.
Well, I'm glad you saw the film, Jim, because frankly, every time someone sees that, it does a little bit more to help Americans understand exactly what's being done to us. Because
I have never opposed the union. I have always believed in them, and I have had some problems with some union people I know over religion, and we'll go into that. But I believe that a union is absolutely a very necessary thing, and is really a godsend. Because it's the only tool that a worker can use to fight people like this. But honest to God, when I saw this last night, I could not believe the tactics that they use. I mean, they're just like, they have their own little core of like the SS
mm-hmm.
go around in these stores, and they intimidate, they terrorize, and a lot of Walmart executives who've been separated for various reasons because they could not continue with the company. For example, like the ones who were sent into foreign countries to be sure that humane conditions were being maintained. They weren't expected to come back with an accurate report. They were expected to come back with a lie.
They were sent out with a bucket of whitewash and a brush, Jim.
And then once he did not come back and do their job, they were separated from the company, and they were, ostracized and prevented from getting other jobs. I mean, these people are really vicious.
Yeah, they are.
And I just never see, I never realized, I mean, I never go to Walmart anyway, and because I just don't like the idea of, it's just too big a place for me, and big places and crowds are not my thing.
I can remember a long time ago when Walmart's big thing was Buy American. And
yeah, I mean, they're buying America. What they're doing is they're making this country a market for Chinese goods.
Yeah, they are. And if you were to go to Bentonville, Arkansas, you would find that there are some countries who have larger offices in Bentonville, Arkansas, than they do for their own embassies to the United States. Seriously.
I don't doubt that. The only Walmarts that have any type of decent situations are the ones in Europe, where they have strong unions and strong,
Walmart packed up and left Germany because the German government wouldn't tolerate their excesses.
Exactly. And, you know, this is basically going back to what is the difference between these people and the robber barons before the progressive era? None.
Right.
And I just can't believe that when we realize if these so-called good people go into the store and if they realize exactly how much that bargain was costing them in terms of other outlays that they're going to have to make in taxes that these companies don't pay, and the cost that their own employees at Walmart have to, create upon the public, because they're given classes in how to get into these programs. So they're told to get food stamps. They're told to get
and they work their workers. They work their workers off the clock.
They do, and
outright not paying people for labor done. And
exactly.
It was our good friend David calling from Tennessee maybe a week or so ago, who pointed out the fact that if you look at the guy and say, if you look at the boss and say, I'm already off the clock, he said, we're going to be making up the schedule for next week, and we might not be able to find you any hours.
They basically tell them, if you can't work that hour or two off the clock, then you can be off the clock permanently. They don't care.
And you can't get justice because the Labor Department has been made into a joke.
Yeah,
in the Bush administration,
they made a mockery of it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just incredible what these people are doing. And I hadn't been paying that much attention.
They put meat cutters out of work in every store they have, Jim, because one store in Texas tried to unionize its butcher shop. Seriously.
I believe that exactly.
You can't get meat cut in a Walmart. Everything comes to them prepackaged, vacuum sealed, water added for weight. Oh, it's a dirty business. It's a dirty business.
Honestly, truly, I don't know how these people can expect to live with themselves, but they can. I don't know if Sam Walton was like that originally, the old man.
He wasn't quite like this, but this is all done in a very similar vein. His oldest and first employee died a few years ago, and that individual died without health insurance and without a pension.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, on that note, I just wanted to get that in about Huckabee being on Leno tonight, and also about what I saw about Walmart, and just share that with you.
Well, the year begins in typical fashion, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, it does, and it's going to be quite an election. But I can tell you one thing, Mr. Huckabee, and I'll just say this, and I'm going to get off here because I don't like to monopolize time. If he claims that angels could guide his bullets,
mm-hmm, and he does,
well, there might be an angel who might guide a bullet his way. He might not like that too much. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, angels. There's lots of angels and lots of bullets.
Absolutely. And how anybody could get up there and pretend the stuff that he's saying and go on the way he goes on, I would honestly be afraid for my immortal soul to do what he's doing.
Oh, well, yeah, and it gets even better. He threw a big party and was yucking it up with his faithful the other night and suggested that they do anything they can to stop non-Huckabee voters from going to the caucus in Iowa tomorrow night. He said, pile snow in front of their driveways. Let the air out of their tires. No kidding.
And this man claims to be a Christian.
Well, yeah, he's a Southern Baptist.
He claims to be a Christian. He's telling people to pull Halloween pranks and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Commit criminal acts against prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he'll come to no good end. I'll guarantee you one thing. I wouldn't trade places for that man for all the tea in Mexico. And on that note, I'm going to beat you tonight, buddy.
And I know what you mean, Jim. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And rolling onward, let's see what's going on here. Hi, who've I got?
There.
Hey.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too. Well, I mean, sort of. We know there's no such thing as a new year, but yeah.
By the way, I've seen that movie, and I suggest everybody, you will never walk in another Walmart again. Ever.
Yeah. Of course, you know, but then again, Susan, to be fair, what does somebody do whose community has already been debased by Walmart and has nowhere else to go?
Where
do they go?
Here in St. Helens, we've got a Walmart here in our town, and it's in the process of driving out the other town, other stores, with the exception of the big chains. I'll go support the big chains rather than go to them.
I mean, for instance,
I'll do anything rather than drive. I don't know how many miles rather than go to Walmart.
You know, where I am, the Walmart that they put in nearest us is literally built on a Civil War battlefield.
Yeah.
Literally on top of the bones of Confederate war dead. Now, there is also a Kroger and a Kmart. The Kmart is like, God, it's like a desert now. The Kroger seems to be holding its own, and I do all of my grocery shopping at the Kroger in an effort to stay the hell out of that place. The thing is, they really have succeeded in making it such that if you can't get it at Walmart, you don't need it.
Well, there's a big movement here, and a lot of the communities here in Oregon, they're going to court, they're doing the whole nine yards. Stay out of our community. We don't want you here.
Yeah,
and
because... They don't bring any good.
No. Deserts.
And,
they're like a poison pill.
And the thing is, it's a little bit frustrating because, you know, you see it and you know, but you knew already. Jim sees it, Jim suspected it, but now Jim has had it put right in front of his face. But Jim wasn't going there anyway.
Well, that's why I say to anybody who has even a question. Watch the movie. I downloaded it off the internet. Go watch it.
Yeah, you can get it on the internet now.
Yeah. By the way, that's not the reason I called, though. Have you got your tin hat on?
It's handy. I can put my hand upon my flying spaghetti monster.
Okay, very good, because I have a conspiracy theory.
All right.
Okay. And I came up with this before it came out that at the assassination of former Prime Minister Bhutto, there was a man with a gun, and then there was another man who apparently detonated himself. Now, the biggest, at the time of the assassination, the biggest thing that made it seem like it was the Taliban was the fact that they indulged in suicide bombers. I immediately said, well, what happened if the guy didn't know he was a suicide bomber? What happens if he was handed a coat by, okay, creepy first killer says to creepy second killer, here, put this coat on. I want to be able to pick you up fast after the shooter and get you out of the crowd and get you away. Sure. Puts the coat on, goes, pulls the trigger. Creepy first killer standing there with a detonator. Boom.
Yeah.
There goes your loose end.
Oh, I don't think you're talking. I thought you were going to tell me something about aliens or secret money being minted in you know, Kuala Lumpur or something like that. No, this is not a conspiracy. This is how that business works. I noticed today that they pushed the Pakistani elections back into February, and I could just, well, you know how it is. Somehow or another, I've begun to think like that little thug in the White House, and I could just hear him rubbing his hands together.
I sure wish we could make that happen here. I'd like to have another month on the job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, it just seems so convenient, because when Al Qaeda bombs, they don't want 40 dead bodies; they want thousands, at the very least, hundreds.
Well, I have a feeling whatever this new round of the circling of the Earth is. Whatever we care to call it, whether it's the year of the rat or the, you know, year 5,764 or the 1,400 years since whatever, you know, since whoever left wherever. Whatever this is that's coming mm-hmm. reminds me of the words of Hunter S. Thompson, who said, "Big darkness soon come."
Oh, that's not bad.
And it really... I mean, the stock market, you know, came back after the holiday and went, "Oh, I've been shot."
It went eep and then dove for the floor.
Get the gun, Rafer. Get the gun. Yeah. Oh. And then
I saw that.
You know, then, Happy New Year. You know what our American New Year's present was today? The huh. day late. The what? much vaunted mythical $100 a barrel oil.
Yeah, $100 barrel oil.
Oh,
ain't life grand?
Yeah, it's the screwing's gonna get deep and painful.
Bohica.
Yeah. No kidding.
Where here it comes again.
Yep. So,
message to Agnes.
Yes.
Donald is going to get his dentures.
Oh, good.
Yeah, his kids came through.
Good. But wonderful.
I don't have to worry about him losing weight.
You can't beat, you know, you really can't beat being able to eat.
Yeah, I know. And I know Agnes was fretting about that. That's one thing.
She does. She frets. That's the perfect word for it.
Perfect.
So, you know, just strap in and hang on tight for the coming year. Because...
Oh, if I had a bomb shelter, I'd be in it. Because I have a feeling if that screaming chimp in the White House thought he could get away with it, or that Yahoo in the Vice President's mansion thought he could get away with it, he'd think it a real good way to go out would be to the mushroom clouds.
Well, but you know, they've got a plan for going down a mine shaft or something, because please remember, these idiots watch Dr. Strangelove and think that
it's a manual.
It's a doc. Yeah, they think it's a documentary.
Yeah.
Well, it's in black.
Worse yet, they
Uncle Dick, it's in black and white. That means it must be true, right?
Oh, God. Worse yet, they watch 24. And, you know, they think you can set off a nuke in a major city and then just go on. You know, and I'm going, oh, my God, people, use your heads, please.
Yeah, charming bunch, aren't they?
Fiction.
Charming bunch.
These are the same people who think the Left Behind series is true, and the the code.
Oh, the Da Vinci Code?
Yeah, the Da Vinci Code is true, which is my stepson. he was raving about that, and I'm going, it's fiction.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I have the misfortune of having three first stepsons.
Oh, you got to admit, it makes the holidays interesting.
Well, and then I'm Wiccan, and that doesn't go over well.
Yeah.
I got all three of them trying to convert me.
Oh, well, you know, just like I said, strap in and hang on tight.
Well, I think what I'm going to do is the next time they try and convert me is I'm going to bring up the flags. Go get a pirate costume, show out, you know, full pirate regalia and say, I'm converted!
Well, you know, I've been looking for a good pirate costume, but there aren't a lot of really quality ones out there.
Yeah. I'm not good with the sewing machine. I just might make my own.
Yar. Yeah, but where are you going to find... You know, remember, you got to get a stuffed parrot to put on your shoulder, too, Susan.
We're going to have to find somebody real good with crafts.
Or real bad with parrots, you know, one way or the other.
Yeah, that's true.
Susan, have a wonderful evening.
You too.
All right, bye now.
Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
And we seem to have started out fairly busy. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita, how are you, dear?
I'm pretty good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm kind of refreshed.
Yeah.
I'm not as exhausted as I was the day after Christmas, because yesterday I just had a whole lot of fun watching football. And
right.
You know the nicest thing about corned beef and cabbage on New Year's Day?
What?
Corned beef hash for breakfast the next day.
Oh.
Yeah, I got up and fixed the whole family plates of homemade corned beef hash with a nice fried egg on the top and some sourdough toast. And yeah, it was
the
pretty
fried egg on top.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It was very well received.
Did you watch that Hawaiian game?
Yeah, sadly I did. I had great hopes for Hawaii, but Mark Richt and his fundamentalists really made short work of them.
Oh. Okay. Well, reason I called was I wanted to say a little something about Walmart, and then there was something else I wanted to say about Made in the USA. Little experience I just had.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, you want me to get Walmart out of the way?
You take it in whatever order you prefer, Juanita.
Well, you know, Walmart had a store up in, somewhere up in Canada, and they were unionized, and they just shut down.
Yeah, they did. Shut down, left town, goodbye, too bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that tells you something.
And the thing about that happened 2 or 3 years ago, they had illegal aliens, I guess, working, cleaning up the stores, and they had them locked in.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody got sick. The way they found it out was one of them got sick, and they couldn't get out. I don't know. I think they were sued. I don't know what the outcome was, but, you know. So, anyway.
Yeah, they're...
The other thing I wanted to say about Made in the USA,
mm-hmm.
You know, I've heard a lot about Tom DeLay and his little foray over in Pacific. Where is that island where...
Oh,
Made in the USA and labor?
Yeah, the Marianas Protectorate, yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if this is where this was made or not, but I bought a little thing through the mail, a little step stool that folded.
Mm-hmm.
And, anyway, it was just up high enough to where I could step on and do some work, you know, reaching up just enough because I have a problem with dizziness and that's about as high as I can go.
Right.
And I was working away and all of a sudden, that thing folded up and under me.
Oh, mercy.
And I could feel myself falling backwards. And I don't know what I grabbed onto, but I grabbed onto something and it broke my fall, thank God. And anyway, I was telling this friend of mine and she said, I know what I did. I called the place where I ordered it from and told them what happened. I said, you shouldn't be selling this product. And they said, well, we will notify the manufacturer. And said, we'll take that off your bill because I've got it on credit. And, so anyway, I was telling this friend of mine about it and she said, well, where was it made? And I said, I don't know. I hadn't had time to look. And I looked and it said Made in the USA. Well, I had told her about, you know, about the slave labor deal. And I said, I don't know if that meant over here or over there, you know.
Right.
But it did say Made in the USA. So with the computer, it said, was Adams Manufacturing Company or something like that. Well, I looked up on the internet and I found it. It's supposed to be in Pennsylvania. Well, I looked up the details of it and it said they made 800,000 a year or 80,000 a year, I forgot. But it said they had one employee. Now, you know that one employee couldn't have made it because this is advertised in all kind of catalogs.
Mm-hmm.
So, you got any ideas how I can find out where it was really made?
No, because that's all proprietary within the company. But you know, if they got one employee, that one employee is not exactly cranking out 80 or 800,000 step stools a year.
Right.
No,
right.
Everybody's got a little shop in a manufacturing zone somewhere in China that is cranking this stuff out. And
but
frankly,
this is made in the USA. So I was wondering if it was made in the Marianas.
Well, that's a possibility too. But I don't think
that's what they say they put on there. Because it is, we do own it, I guess, or whatever. We're in control of them.
Right. I think if you were to dig deep, you would find out there's a lot of fraud in that kind of labeling. That's why, among other things, American companies or companies that are ostensibly American resist, Juanita, the idea of having to label things. You know, before Thanksgiving, we had that story about Walmart resisting labeling country of origin. It's called country of origin. Boy, I should have stayed off another day. Country of origin labeling. It's called cool legislation. And Walmart wants nothing to do with it because, you know, you might look down at one of those Walmart turkeys and find out that it was raised in, lower bumchuck, and decide that you didn't want anything to do with their turkey, and their sales go down, and the next thing, well, you see how it works.
Yeah.
I mean, we roasted a turkey at Thanksgiving, and just because I'd seen the story, I was kind of particular about it. I looked all over the label of that sucker, and I couldn't see anywhere that said where that turkey came from.
Well, you know that at Thanksgiving, they had a bunch of them from China, and they say it was too late to recall them because it already gone out to all the stores all over the country.
Imagine that. We can't raise our own turkeys anymore. This is a nation that is headed, we're on greased rails headed for disaster.
I know it.
You know, when you can't make your own shoes, when you can't raise a turkey, when the only way you can raise a beef cow is to put it in a 100-acre lot up to its own kneecaps or whatever it is cattle have in poo, sitting right next to where it's eaten, you're
and
in trouble. You are a
up,
nation in trouble.
Up cow parts.
Yeah. Well, you know, parts is parts,
parts,
I guess. Right.
And it's the herbivore.
Right. Yeah. Make it right. You know, this is, it does not bode well for us. That's why I'm stalking off my garden boundaries for this summer.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to imagine. We've got a bunch of snow on the ground here now. But I'm an optimist, and spring is just around the corner.
Oh, yeah. We're having a freeze tonight here in Florida.
Well, I heard Guy James talking about that earlier today. Yeah, it's going to get brutally cold for you folks.
27 here. Well, they're already, last night they covered the strawberries, and it was like about 38. So that's not really freezing.
No,
but
29 and 28 can sure whack an orange crop in a hurry.
Yeah, definitely. And see, in Florida, we're not prepared for that. You know, nothing's built for that or anything.
28 degrees.
A lot of people laugh at us about the
weather. But 28 degrees to you guys is like 10 below to us.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's pretty cold. If it gets any colder than that, we don't want to know what to do.
Yeah. And, the farmers have the smudge pots out to the extent that there are any farmers left. I don't know. The entire orange crop may be produced by a conglomerate now.
It's still a lot of farming here. There's not a lot of citrus here like there used to be, but still that affects everything. When that citrus freezes, this boys, and all they can do is juice it. And it's a mess.
And it doesn't sell at as high a price as juice as it does,
Yeah, it doesn't, it, once it's off that tree, that's it. It doesn't do like bananas. It doesn't ripen later or whatever, it just starts to rot. And especially when it's frozen.
And
it used to be the big thing around here. That's what my folks worked in, the citrus industry, but a lot of that's gone from around here. A lot of the groves are gone. But it used to be really bad, and there's a lot of It's a big farm place here, you know, with tomatoes. You heard about how they treat the tomato farm migrant workers.
Oh, gosh, yes.
But they treat them all like that. They have camps and all where they're...
Yeah, and...
Imprisoned and all. Really, it's bad. It's been that way for years, really. But anyway, so we do have a lot of farming in this area. You wouldn't believe, and ranching, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, a lot of cattle.
A lot of cattle, yeah. You just don't think of Florida in those terms, but pretty much that's it. And then the tourist industry is, I guess, the...
Tourist farming.
The third one. Huh?
Yeah, tourist farming.
Yeah.
Keep them down there a couple of weeks and then ship them back out to somewhere else.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, I hope your year goes very well for you, and that you prosper, and that you
thank you
have some respite. But like I told Susan, and I'll tell everybody else, hang on tight because it's going to get ugly, and it's going to get ugly fast.
Yeah. Just hope for the best. I'll tell you, because those people are vicious. They're vicious. Anyway.
All right. You have a wonderful evening.
You know your enemy. You know, sometimes you...
Oh, yeah. You got to keep an eye on them. You can't mm-hmm. Expect to beat them by just pretending they don't exist. And
yeah, a lot of people don't realize that they are. You know, they're not nice people. They think they're just kind of... Some people think they're just kind of mistaken, you know, the ones...
Or have a difference of opinion with them.
Uh-huh.
You know.
Or they've got a good heart. They just don't know any better or whatever. But they're evil. They're very evil. And they know what they're doing. I do believe that.
Sure they do. Sure they do. Mm-hmm. They mean to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
And this being an election year, they're going to be particularly nasty.
Yeah.
And they will, you know, frankly, if civilization was just a shade nastier, they'd shoot you quick as look at you and call it freedom.
Oh, I think that they probably do that, don't you?
In some instances.
Yeah. Isn't it funny how those people show up where disaster happens? Didn't Negroponte go to Pakistan?
Yeah. Yeah, death follows him wherever he goeth.
Yeah.
Juanita, I'm going to try to catch a couple more calls here. You have a wonderful evening.
And you too. God bless you in every way, upside and downside.
Well, thank you very kindly, and you as well. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. Let's see what's going on here.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, how are you?
Happy New Year.
And the same to you.
Yeah, well, happy new beginnings also. You know, it's, I think, a trifecta for me, you know, moving back to New York. You know, divorce was finalized over the holiday and teaching. You know,
that's a tough time to finalize something like that. But
oh, yeah, but it had to be done because that was the only time I had time off. But, hey. You know,
I can hear. You know, I think I can hear a little more Brooklyn in your voice already.
Well, you can take the guy out of Brooklyn, but you can't take the Brooklyn out of a guy.
Isn't that the truth?
Yeah. One thing I thank God for, I won't say never, but I won't have to see Walmart on a daily basis.
Are there still neighborhood stores and mom and pops and stuff like
that? That's all there really is here. You know, we have Target. And, you know, we have Costco.
Now, see, I have Costco envy.
Yeah, I like Costco.
Because they're run on a fairly, to the extent that a giant retailer can, they're run on a fairly moral model.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're union-friendly. The Teamsters have a good relationship with them. And they got a bunch of cool stuff.
Oh, yeah. And Target is that bad. I wouldn't say it's as great as Costco, but, hey, you know.
Right.
You take what you can get. You know, what I wanted to... But I just wanted to point out that, part of the reason why Walmart hasn't invaded New York or polluted New York is because, basically, you know, the city has demanded that they pay its workers, like, $9-something an hour, which they're not going to do beginning salary. Hello?
Yeah, that's part of it, and I think in light of something that Jim mentioned a little bit ago, Kevin, also You know, they never buy their land. They always lease it.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't. I wonder if they could lease land anywhere in the greater New York metropolitan area where they could actually afford to run a store.
Probably not, because it takes up too much real estate. And it would have to be, like, way out in the Bronx or Staten Island, which are the two cheapest boroughs remaining, or counties, whatever you want to call it. But
and if they're out in the hinterland, they're not going to accomplish their goal anyway.
Well,
so
people will come there, because people will come out there if they will build it, people will come to save a dollar. But the problem is, especially in Staten Island, there is no real public transportation out there.
Well, because it's an island.
Yeah, and it's pretty much cut off from the rest of the city, except for one or two lanes. But also want to pay attention to the Iowa caucus, you know, putting Walmart aside. I think John Edwards is starting to get the press that he's deserving.
He is, and he's also, it appears, from at least one poll that I glanced at earlier today, that he's in a dead heat with Obama and Clinton.
Yeah, because he was on, I think, Time Magazine or Newsday last week or the week before as a dark horse, and I'm like, I never thought of him being a dark horse. It's just a main contender. It's just that the press has been very cruel to him.
Disdainful, even. In the world of politics, it's better to have somebody saying nasty things about you than saying nothing at all.
Exactly. Even Alan Keyes is getting better. More press than he is with Alan Keyes.
Alan Keyes. Oh, you know, I could have gone another week with it, maybe two, without hearing that name, but no, you just had to.
Well, he's a joke, and, you know, like, and I think it was you who said any black man that's a Republican is like a chicken being for Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, that, actually, you know who first said that?
Who?
That was the minister father of former Oklahoma Congressman J.C. Watts, who was apparently at one point in time the only African American Republican in America. And somebody asked his father, you know, well, would you vote for your son? He said, black man voting for the Republicans like a chicken voting for Colonel Sanders. Yeah, so, you know, his own daddy said he wouldn't vote for him.
Yeah, well, you know what kind of person you must be when your own parents vote for you.
Yeah, true enough. And then, well, it's reminiscent of Ari Fleischer, too, whose parents are FDR-style Democrats. And he said, you know, here I am, a spokesman and a Republican, spokesman for the White House and a Republican. He said, that, in my parents' estimation, that's just slightly above being a crack dealer.
Well, I just think at the end of the day, these people are doing it for the money. It you know, it is what it is. You know, Republicans do pay better.
Oh, they do. Believe me, I know. Yeah.
And it's about the paycheck. It really is about, you know, take Condoleezza Rice. You know, she used to work for Gary Hart.
Long, long ago. That's very true. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, she was a Democrat like 15, 20 years ago. So, you know, these are opportunist people. You know, and my personal favorite, Amorosa from from the Donald Trump show.
Oh, oh yeah. Oh man, that one makes
my Condi Rice.
Oh, I'd forgotten about her.
Yeah. One time she tried to switch camps and go to the Bush campaign, you know, after Clinton got out of office. So it's like, you know, these people, they must, like I said, to me, I'm at the point where, you know, Democrat or Republican, people in Washington are very opportunistic, and they will go wherever the money is, like human nature.
To a certain extent, yeah, and a lot of that, I think, is also because we still, on our side, Kevin, we still don't get it. You said the Republicans pay better, and that's absolutely true, but they pay better because they understand how important it is that they do so. Unless you're in the way up in the thin atmosphere reaches of Democratic Party politics, we don't pay better.
Well, not only that, I think there's a payback in the right wing. It's profitable, and it's immediately profitable to be in the right wing. You know, come on. Politicians pay big money.
Well, look who they've created. Ann Coulter is an entirely... she's entirely a made-up creation. Same with Michelle Malkin. Help me with a few others. People that have just... Well, the creeps over at Newsmuck. You know, Newsmax was entirely a creature that was made out of whole cloth by right-wing money. And they did it for good reason, because... Again, it's the same thing that I mentioned a few minutes ago with politics. Being ignored is worse than being excoriated.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, I once tried to explain to people in talking about right-wing radio, and they'd say, well, I'm going to call the station manager tomorrow and give him a piece of my mind. I said, well, yeah, you do that, but you know what? He's going to hang up the phone and he's going to chuckle, because he's going to know that you're going to be there every day listening to be outraged.
You're absolutely right. But, like, to me, like, the right wing, you know, again, they're willing to give, because they look at it as an investment.
Yeah.
They look at this.
It's an investment in their ability to own this place. Well, they started making that investment in 1964, and it only paid off in 2000.
Oh, yeah.
It paid off a little bit in, you know, it paid off early. In 1980, when Reagan sleazed his way into the White House, but that wasn't entirely what they wanted. But they got their back and their front feet in the trough in 2000.
Oh yeah,
and they never for a minute thought about giving up.
Oh yeah, an interesting movie to watch if you want to talk about the Republicans' dream, Rollerball with James Caan.
Oh God, yeah, I love that film.
It's like the John Houseman character.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about, and basically everything is privatized. It's like the game of the future. Everything is privatized.
Yeah, and even the sports teams are corporate. They're not.
Well, the sports team are corporate now, you know.
Yeah, but they still have ostensibly, they've got a community name on top of them, as opposed to it's the Exxon Mobil Tankers or whatever.
Yeah.
It looked a little, I remember, I went to see it in the theaters when I was a kid. And it looked a little silly back then. Oh, well, you know. But I saw it again recently, and you know what? Not so silly now.
Oh, yeah, it's very scary. It is very scary now. And it's like that's what...
And frankly, roller derby with motorcycles will probably find its way onto the X Games in the next 10 years.
I wouldn't put it past them, especially if it's on Fox.
Yeah, if it's on Fox in the next 5 years.
Yeah. Anyway, Bob, it's good to hear from you. Happy New Year. You know, in honor of Sunday prayer, God bless you and your family.
All right. Thanks, Kevin, and the same to you.
Okay, then.
Take care now.
Yeah,
bye. All right. It's time for the news, and we'll come back after the news. With more of your phone calls, 877-443-2366 is the number on your unlimited long-distance dialing plan, 304-658-5453. Email to bob@headonradio.com. It's all just that easy. And we'll be right back here on America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported Liberal Voice, The Horn.
Just to
This is the Quality News Network. Federal prosecutors will investigate the destruction of CIA videotapes showing agents interrogating terrorism suspects. Attorney General Michael Mukasey announced that the Justice Department will try to determine whether any laws were broken. An inquiry found that there is sufficient evidence to pursue possible criminal charges. Presidential candidates in Iowa are furiously making the last-minute rounds to grab as many votes as they can in tomorrow's state caucus. For Democrats, it is a statistical dead heat for the primary win. On the Republican side, Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney are tied, with third place shared by John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and Fred Thompson. A prisoner who overpowered four guards, took their weapons, and escaped from a hospital in suburban Washington, D.C., has been shot to death by Maryland State Police during their attempt to recapture him. The 45-year-old convict was serving life in a hospital prison for kidnapping, hijacking, and robbery. In London, it took at least 125 firefighters to contain a blaze at one of the world's leading cancer treatment hospitals. Patients at the Royal Marsden Hospital were evacuated in the fire that consumed the hospital's top floor and roof. No casualties have been reported. Kenya continues to burn as international pressure mounts for investigation into the recent contested presidential election. Meantime, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is making a round of diplomatic telephone calls to Kenyan leaders, prodding them to put a stop to the violence. Hours after Pakistan's election commission announced a six-week delay in the parliamentary vote, the party of the assassinated former Pakistani Minister Benazir Bhutto announced it will take part in February 18th elections. The government of Sri Lanka has withdrawn its six-year ceasefire agreement with the Tamil Tigers. The announcement came just after the bombing of a military bus, killing four people in downtown Colombo. Tiger rebels are suspected in that blast. Two humanitarian aid health workers kidnapped in Somalia last week have been released. The doctor and nurse are said to be unharmed. More than a foot of snow was dumped in southeast Michigan on New Year's Day, closing roads and airports. Some areas in Michigan and Ohio remain without power today. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check business right after this message.
Civility takes an effort. It requires that people remember that relationships need our attention. Whether we are talking about our most important personal relationships, how we get along with our colleagues, or the way we interact with strangers, it is what we contribute that defines the results. Even when the other people are not prepared to give their best selves, what we put in determines what we get out. Ralph Waldo Emerson suggested, "We must be as courteous to a man as we are to a picture, which we are willing to give the advantage of a good light." This is the essence of civility. When we are civil to strangers, when we defer at the intersection instead of racing out ahead, when we hold the door for someone we don't know, when we smile at someone who catches our eye, we declare our choice for a civilized society. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
Democratic Congressman Tom Lantos says he won't run for office next year because he's been diagnosed with cancer. The 79-year-old California House representative is currently serving his 14th term, elected to Congress back in 1981. The former Daimler Chrysler hit with the largest fine ever assessed against any company for violating fuel economy standards set by the U.S. government. The more than $30 million fine was levied for imported passenger cars from 2006. 2007 was one of the safest years to fly in more than four decades. That's according to the Geneva-based Aircraft Crashes Record Office, a report of only 136 serious plane crashes worldwide. The Federal Reserve may cut interest rates again. Minutes from their latest meeting hint at the possibility to help avoid recession. Tresenda Corporation is poised to acquire a 35% stake in oil and gas company Delta Petroleum, the deal worth an estimated $684 million. Lightsweet crude oil currently trading at $99.62 a barrel, gold at $860 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow sunk 221 points to end at 13,043, NASDAQ down 42 points, the S&P 500 off 21. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Alrighty then, hour number two begins. I was just checking email and so forth. Time to update the spam filter. One of them got through into my inbox that told me I had a below average size. Well, you know how the emails go. But something else that wasn't quite spam, but was close enough to be reminiscent of it, was one of my right wing pieces of email that I found just fascinating. Let's see here. You got to love this. Oh darn it! It probably won't let me open it in the spam box. All right, we'll have to unspam this for a second, just long enough for me to share it with you. No, I don't want to always trust them. There we go. So, apparently the story, which I find just delightful. You know that the right-wing establishment is having a hissy over the Brother Mac Huckstraby candidacy, right? Sure. Because he says things that they don't like. Now, that's not... Please, let's not make the mistake of thinking that this means that he's a decent human being, because he isn't. But it is rattling cages a little bit. And hence this headline from... And don't go there. Don't ever give them any web traffic. From Newsmuck. The baby brother of the oxymoron, you know, the junkie, Flush Flimball, David Limbaugh, writes a column for these goobers. Apparently, Big Brother Flush isn't willing to share any of his $29 million a year with David. Or maybe he does. Maybe that's part of the little Ponzi scheme that they run on the right wing. Headline, Step Up, Fred. Conservatives need you. You know, half-dead Fred, Fraud Thompson. It's time to step up, Fred. Conservatives need a leader about whom we have no major reservations. The only one looming out there about you is your failure so far to persuade voters you want the job. Well, it's kind of hard to persuade anybody when you can't stay awake. All of the GOP candidates are vastly superior to all of the Democratic candidates. Well, see, the family that does OxyContin together, well, whatever. Here's the way I see the field now, says the other Flimball. Rudy's a strong leader and very good on national security and the war, but he's a social issues liberal whose pledge to appoint originalist judges is encouraging but not completely convincing. John McCain is a war hero and a patriot. He's been strong on Iraq, but disappointing on Guantanamo, tough interrogation techniques, and other war-related... Okay, David Limbaugh, here's how it works out, buddy. We're going to waterboard your ass and see how you feel about it afterwards, okay? Yeah, that'd be great. Mike Huckstraby, I believe, is a strong and sincere Christian. That means a lot to me. It doesn't bother me that he wears it on his sleeve, assuming he's not being exploitive of his religion, and there I'll give him the benefit of the doubt. So, in a sort of a backhanded way, he says, you know, he's playing them for fools and suckers that they are. My problem with Huckabee concerns his political agenda. Huckabee is probably the strongest social issue conservative, and since his views are driven by his strong faith, I don't fear he'll change for expediency or other reasons. But it does bother me that he appears to believe, erroneously in my opinion, that his faith requires him to endorse an unacceptably expansive role for government. In other words, he's not signed on quite yet with all of the right-wing thuggery, just most of it. Jeez. So, let's see, Romney. When's he going to get to Romney? Ah, a man I've warmed to as the campaign has unfolded. Really? Have you warmed
to Willard Romney. Have you really, Mr. Flimball? I began with great skepticism because of his major, far too recent flips on major issues. Well, I guess this must have been penned before Romney came out and put the shiv between George Bush's ribs today. Right? You know, saying that Bush had mismanaged the Iraq war. No mention of the occupation, but I guess we'll just take it as read that that applies as well, huh? So, you know, that they are in disarray. They are a mess. And it's not going to get any better or easier for them as they go along. But like the cornered rats that they are, they're only going to attack harder. And that's why I said, as this year dawns, and we all understand that, like I said, the idea of a new year or an old year is wholly artificial. There are cycles in the rotation of the revolution of the earth around the sun. But if you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, the sun's moving, the earth's moving. Day by day by day, we float through space that we've never floated through before in a constantly expanding universe. And that, you know, if you spend too much time with it, you wind up going, oh, Ethel, bring the laudanum. My brain hurts. And our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com passed along some information to me that you might find interesting. He says, I'd wish you a happy 2008, but I'd be at least 4 years too late. According to the most charitable calculation, next year will be 2011. The mistake dates back to the early 6th century. Until then, even the church was using the pagan calendar. That chronology was based on the legendary founding of Rome, referred to in Latin literature as Ab Urbe Condita, from the founding of the city. As a cross-reference, it also cited the reign of the prevailing tyrant. For instance, if you check the Vatican archives, the notarized date for the Nicene Creed would read, in the 1078th year of Rome and in the 19th year of Constantine. Western civilization, Eugene says, obviously needed a shorter and less pagan date. So in the 1278th year of Rome, otherwise known as AD 525, the church finally converted its calendar. The new chronology, based upon the birth of Jesus, was calculated by a mathematical monk named Dionysius Exiguus. Dionysius is not the most trustworthy name for a mathematician or a monk. In fairness, however, the poor guy was doing division with Roman numerals. Yeah, you try it. It is amazing that his chronology was wrong by only 4 years. The church apparently caught the error because Dionysius was not made a saint, yet it never corrected that mistake. The church seems to be quite ecumenical about arithmetic. Once you adopt Arabic numbers, however, the mistake's easy to find. Any Renaissance man could have done it. Herod the Great was known to have died in the 749th year of Rome, and if you take the Bible as gospel, Jesus was born before Herod's death. However, Dionysius calculated Jesus' birth in the 753rd year of Rome, and that's a four-year discrepancy, and you can't claim that it was just a long gestation, you know, like a soap opera pregnancy. Ironically, the Reformation never brought up the mistake. You would have thought that Martin Luther would have rubbed it in a little bit. After all, he described one pope as a syphilitic dung beetle. God, you guys give me a hard time. So he hardly would be shy about an accounting discrepancy. However, on the subject, Luther was discreet. Jean Calvin and John Knox were also surprisingly silent. You'd expect them to wish you a doer but mathematically precise new year. So apparently all Christendom is going along on the cover-up. Then, says Eugene, so will I. I don't want to incite another 1900 years of persecution. 2008 it is, and have a happy one. And all of that is just fascinating to me, because the idea of a new year, it's a very human impulse to mark anniversaries, to mark passages, to mark ages, that sort of thing, to try to get some grasp on time because of the inexorable grasp that time has on us. But if in fact this is 2011 and possibly 2012 instead of 2008, I refer you to another calendar, namely the long count of the Maya people, which says that the whole shooting match comes to an end somewhere around December the 23rd, 2012. And Guy James said this afternoon he expected this year to be a really tough bit of sledding. He may have been more right than even he knew. Now, granted, I'm not going to go down to Chichen Itza and sit there and wait for the aliens to land or anything, or the first truck to pull through on the NAFTA superhighway or anything. But there is something elegant about the Mayan calendar and its mathematical round coming to an end in the very near future. Wouldn't it be funny if it all went to pot next December instead of four Decembers from now? And we'll see, the Mayans were wrong. No, the Mayans weren't wrong. Dionysius Exiguus was wrong. But, you know, far be it from us to, you know, point out that sort of thing. So, happy New Year. I wonder what Kurt Vonnegut, what one of his Tralfamadorians would say about our New Year's celebrations. Never mind the Tralfamadorians. I, for one, would like to see the New Year fall at a time when you can stand outside and have a conversation with your neighbor, or maybe cocktails, shoot off some fireworks, and not worry about freezing any exposed digits off. Whose idea was this, anyway? The Romans and the church. January, New Year's, please. You know, if you're going to mark time, mark it with something that makes a little bit of sense, like maybe the vernal equinox. That would work. You know, that's planting season, and that's when the life returns to this part of the hemisphere, and it goes the other way in the other bottom half of the world, and, you know, somehow makes a little bit of sense along the way. Because something else is happening. Nothing's going on January 1st. Let's see. It's what? 10 days new season. You know, winter's 10 days old, and consequently we've got 4 or 5, 6 inches of snow on the ground outside. But nothing's going on. You know, Christmas is over, mercifully so. And I don't have to flip out for another 355 days or so. Of course, then again, when would we play the football bowl game? See how easily my mind turns back to what really matters this evening? Sorry. I know. It's very lowbrow of me but there's a lot of us lowbrows out there that love our college football. Bless his heart, our good friend Bart Kopp predicted a gigantic stomping of Missouri by Arkansas. Arkansas lost 38-7. And he also predicted a stomping of my Mountaineers by the mighty Sooner Schooner. God, I hope he's as wrong about WVU as he was about Missouri. So that, you know, there you have it. It is a slow, things have been, it's a little bit slow today, depending on where you want to go, what you want to talk about. But it should be. You deserve a little bit of a break before the stuff really hits the oscillating blades of the fan. It's a new year, but some things never change. For instance, right-wing Republicans and sex scandals. We take you now to Houston, Texas, where religious leaders, this being prayer meeting and all, religious leaders have called on Harris County District Attorney Chuck Rosenthal to resign after word got out of a scandal regarding emails that detailed his affections and his affectionate relationship with his secretary, who we might add was not his wife. The Houston Area Pastor Council, H-A-P-C, is that spelling? Hap, no, it doesn't spell anything. An interracial and interdenominational group of about 150 ministers has called on Rosenthal, whose name does not sound distinctly Christian, to resign as district attorney. While Mr. Rosenthal has served the community capably as district attorney, his willingness to abuse the trust of his office, his failure to exercise good moral judgment, the lack of wisdom in using his government email for these here messages, knowing they are public record, all add up to someone who has serious flaws in private and public character. That's what the pastor's group said. The Harris County Republican Party hasn't called for his resignation, but has requested that he withdraw from the March 4th GOP primary and give up his 2008 reelection campaign. His term ends at the end of this year, and he is defiant, Mr. Rosenthal is, saying he plans to run for district attorney and win. Rosenthal's secretary is one Carrie Stevens. And that's K-E-R-R-Y Stevens. And I'm trying to... Oh, okay, okay. There's. I was looking for a pronoun there, a him or a her. If it was a him, you really would have understood, wouldn't you? The outrage of the right-wing Republicans. But no, she's a she. His email surfaced last month as part of a federal civil rights lawsuit against the Harris County Sheriff's Office. There are no explicit emails. They don't say, you know, oh, honey, I want to go down and swing from the chandeliers with you, baby, naked. Nothing like that. But on more than a dozen occasions, Rosenthal says to Carrie Stevens, I love you, and asks her to let him hold her. You know, on the continuum of pig-licking sexual outrage, this is pretty tame stuff, I gotta tell you. I mean, there's no mention in here of wanting to get her liquored up on a boat and rub her down with falafel or any other Middle Eastern delights. There's no OxyContin involved. Rosenthal says he's not having an affair with Stevens. He says he had an affair with her in the 1980s. When he was married to his first wife. But that didn't lead to his divorce from his first wife. And he said he told his present wife, all these wives, you can't keep, you know, repiglickins and spouses, you know, you can't keep track without a program. Said he told his current wife about the affair before he hired Carrie Stevens when he took office in 2000. And Repiglican party leaders there in Harris County are going absolutely crazier than a sprayed roach, trying to find some lawyer, any lawyer in Harris County. As you know, and it's not like you can't swing a dead cat in Harris County without hitting a damn Repiglican to run against him in the primary. I don't know. Maybe if there'd been some crystal meth involved and you know, a real floozy perhaps. Maybe the Repiglicans would have been happier about it. 12 I love yous and a let me hold you? You know, look. Little golf clap for the normal Repiglican having an apparently normal adulterous affair with another normal Repiglican. I'm impressed. Today was the last day for candidates to sign up for the primary race in Houston, Harris County. So, for all I know, they may still be stuck with him on the ballot. All of this generated by the Houston Area Pastor Council. Every last one of whom has apparently not caught that whole judge not that ye be not judged business from the New Testament. They weren't even looking into whether or not this Rosenthal guy was a good district attorney. It was a lawsuit against the Harris County Sheriff's Office. Wow. But they caught her saying, they caught him saying, I love you. Those are some of the three, those are three of the dirtiest words in the Repiglican vocabulary. Can't have people running around loving and smollicking all over folk. I love you. Ooh, just gives me the shudders. It does, hallelujah, brethren and sistren. It gives me the blind shudders. But since that's a little bit wimpy for a scandal, I thought you guys might get a kick out of this. This is one of those things where you kind of have to go, because it's really a long list. With the year having ended, such as it is, the excellent folks over at TPM Muckraker, motto, they've got muck, we've got rakes, love that, have compiled a list. They say, basically, that it was partly inspired by the folks, the right-wingers over at Powerline, who said they couldn't think of any Bush officials who'd had any scandal. Here we go. The list of Bush officials indicted, convicted, or pled guilty. You know, for those of you who have to periodically deal with right-wingers, whether they be family or friends, it might be good to go over and find this and bookmark it and hang on to it for future reference. The official title, tpmmuckraker.com, and then search TPM's Great List of Scandalized Administration Officials. Maybe scandalized administration officials would get you there. But this is handy, and some of them are real precious, too, because I remember some of the details surrounding them. Indicted, convicted, pled guilty. Eric G. Andell, Deputy Undersecretary in charge of newly created Office of Safe and Drug-Free Schools, previously Senior Advisor to Secretary of Education Rod Page, pleaded guilty to one count of conflict of interest for using government travel for personal causes and was sentenced to 1 year of probation, 100 hours of community service, and fined $5,000. Claude Allen, Assistant to the President for Domestic Policy, and I'll remind you, hardcore fundamentalist, he resigned and pled guilty to shoplifting from Target stores. This was the scam whereby he would go in, take one thing in, return it, and steal another. I remind you, fundamentalist. Lester Crawford, Commissioner, Food and Drug Administration, resigned in late September 2005 after only 2 months on the job. On October 17th, he pleaded guilty to two misdemeanor counts of making a false writing and conflict of interest. February 27th, 2007, Crawford was sentenced to 3 years of probation and was fined $90,000. Brian Doyle, Deputy Press Secretary, you know, this is one of the highs or lows, depending on how you score this stuff. Brian Doyle, Deputy Press Secretary, Department of Homeland Security, resigned in the wake of a child sex scandal. Doyle was arrested on April 4th, 2006, and pleaded no contest on September 19th, 2006, to seven counts of use of a computer to seduce a child and 16 counts of transmitting harmful material to a minor. On November 17, 2006, Brian Doyle was sentenced to 5 years in state prison and 10 years of probation. He will also need to register as a sex offender. Stephen Griles, Deputy Secretary at the Interior Department. He's the highest-ranked administration official convicted so far in the Jack Abramoff scandal. Can you do that to Abram? He was sentenced to 10 months incarceration. John T. Korsmo, Chairman of the Federal Housing Finance Board from 2002 to 2004. He pleaded guilty. Not no contest. No. He wasn't tried and found guilty. He came out and said, Judge, I did it. I did it with my little hatchet. He pleaded guilty in 2005 to lying to the United States Senate and an inspector general. He swore he had no idea how a list of presidents, for FHFB-regulated banks were invited to a fundraiser for his friend's congressional campaign. That's the Federal Housing, Federal Housing Finance Board. On the invites, Korsmo was listed as the special guest. He got 18 months of probation and a $5,000 fine, and more's the pity that he is not the special guest of the federal penitentiary system. Onward and downward. Scooter Libby, Vice President Dick Cheney's chief of staff, you remember this, say it with me, resigned after being indicted for lying to a grand jury and investigators in connection with the investigation stemming from the leak of Valerie Wilson's covert CIA operative's identity. Convicted on 4 of 5 counts, making him the highest-ranking White House official to be convicted of a felony since the Iran-Contra scandal, sentenced to 30 months imprisonment and a fine of $250,000. On July 2nd, however, he landed on chance and drew the get-out-of-jail-free card, the one with the picture of George W. Bush in the striped suit getting kicked out of, you know, the little orange card on the Monopoly board. David Safavian. See, we're still on indicted, convicted, pled guilty, okay? David Safavian, former head of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy at the Office of Management and Budget, convicted of lying to ethics officials and Senate investigators, you know, not just once, but two lies in one, just like certs, Senate investigators about his ties to lobbyist Jack Abramoff. On October 27, 2006, he was sentenced to 18 months in prison. He's currently appealing the ruling. And Robert Stein. Robert Stein is a former comptroller and funding officer for the now-disbanded Coalition Provisional Authority, Southern Central Region in Al-Hilah, Iraq. He pleaded guilty to conspiracy, to bribery, to conspiracy to commit money laundering, to possession of a machine gun, as well as being a felon in possession of a firearm. That's right, he was a felon before he got the job. On January 30, 2007, Stein was sentenced to 9 years in prison and ordered to forfeit $3.6 million, and we wonder where the money went in the Coalition Provisional Authority. You know, the $9 billion. I don't know where the $9 billion went. It was here 1 minute, the next minute it was gone. It's just disappeared. And Roger Stilwell, desk officer, Interior Department, pleaded guilty to failing to report Redskins tickets and free dinners from, come on everybody, say it with me, Jack Abramoff. And yes, you can do that to Abram, apparently. Next subject. Resigned due to investigation, pending investigation, or allegations of impropriety. See why I said this was going to take a while? It's the Bush administration. Philip Cooney, chief of staff, White House Counsel on Environmental Quality, well, there's an oxymoron, a former oil industry lawyer, aren't they all, with no scientific expertise, who'd have thunk it, Cooney resigned after it was revealed he had watered down reports on global warming. George Deutsch, press aide, NASA, resigned amid allegations he prevented the agency's top climate scientist from speaking publicly about global warming, and the fine folks at TPM Muckraker don't mention the fact that he also dummied up his own diploma. No surprise. Michael Elston, chief of staff to Deputy Attorney General Paul McNulty, announced his resignation on June 15, 2007. Despite allegations that he'd threatened at least 4 of the 8 fired U.S. attorneys, McNulty said Elston had served the Justice Department, quote, with distinction for nearly 8 years. Yeah, I know. I know. I'm going to need a shower after this. Kyle Dustin Dusty Fago. Hint one, when you're hiring someone named Fago, ain't no good gonna come of it. Kyle Dustin Dusty Fago was appointed executive director of the CIA, the agency's third highest post, in October 2004, and then resigned and was ultimately indicted on bribery charges related to the Duke Cunningham scandal. Well, how refreshing, not to say Jack Abramoff. Alberto Gonzalez, former attorney general, resigned without explanation amidst investigation of the hey, we know him, never mind. Next, Monica Goodling, graduated from the Draw Spunky School of Law, Justice Department liaison to the White House, senior counsel to Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez, resigned April 7, 2007, amidst the investigation of the firing of the U.S. attorneys. Michelle Larson Korsmo. Wait a minute. Did I just miss something? Didn't we have a... John T. Korsmo. By God, we did. Michelle Larson Korsmo, Deputy Chief of Staff, Department of Labor, helped her husband, see John Korsmo above, with his donor dodge. Quietly left her labor plum job in February 2004, where she spent every day of her life trying to find another worker to screw. About 2 weeks before news broke that she and her husband were the targets of a criminal probe. Howard, you know, when you've got these gangland nicknames, it really ought to be a clue. Howard Cookie Krongard. Oh, we know about Cookie. Former State Department Inspector General. Accused of not properly investigating State Department contractor fraud in Iraq and Afghanistan, of retaliating against whistleblowers in his own office, and of not telling the truth about his knowledge of his brother's ties with Blackwater. Accused? Damn, we've got the tape. He did it. A State Department contractor. Blackwater, that is. Faced with a possible perjury investigation, Howard Krongard resigned on December 7, 2007, a date which will live in infamy. Oh, no, I'm not done. Julie McDonald, former Deputy Assistant Secretary for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. How can you get into corruption when you're in charge of fish, wildlife, and parks? I mean, what? You're out there bribing bears? Hey, trout, come here. The first one's free. Resigned in May 2007 after an Inspector General's report found she had improperly leaked information to private organizations, bullied staff scientists, and broken federal rules. Department of the Interior is investigating many of her decisions regarding endangered species. So far, 7 have been overturned. I've seen the invites to one of her parties. Please, you know, please come to Julie's house. We're having a bald eagle barbecue, you know, that kind of thing. Paul McNulty, Deputy Attorney General for the Department of Justice, resigned after questions about his involvement in the U.S. attorney firings and his testimony to Congress about said firings. Yeah, okay. Richard Pearl, Chairman, Defense Policy Board, member, Project for a New American Century, resigned from Pentagon Advisory Panel amid the conflict of interest charges. No. Susan Ralston. Oh, what was that song? Hut Sut Ralston on the Rillera and the Brawla Brawla Suet? Sadly, I don't have that handy, otherwise we'd play it now. Susan Ralston, Assistant, White House, resigned amidst revelations that she had accepted thousands of dollars in gifts from, 1, 2, 3, Jack Abramoff without compensating him counter to White House ethics rules. Janet, here's a name. Janet Rehnquist? Yes. Janet Rehnquist, Inspector General, Department of Health and Human Services, resigned June 1st, 2003 in the face of an investigation into her alleged efforts to block a politically dangerous probe on behalf of the Bush crime family. I'm sorry, crime's not in there, just says Bush family. James Roche, Secretary, U.S. Air Force, resigned in the wake of Boeing tanker lease scandal after it was revealed he had rather crudely pushed for Boeing to win a $23 billion contract. Somehow I don't think he was forced into resignation because of the crudeness of it, but perhaps the criminality. Joseph Schmitz. Well, that just makes you really hose down the microphone. Schmitz! Joseph Schmitz, Inspector General Defense, resigned amid charges he personally intervened to protect top political appointees. What did we think he was there for? Bradley Schlotzman. You go to the Schlotzman cutoff and you get out and cut off your Schlotzman. Bradley Schlotzman resigned from his third and final post with the Justice Department after accusations of actively politicizing the department. He's currently under investigation. This is like the end of the Dragnet part where they show the guy standing profile. He's currently under investigation by the department's Inspector General. Thomas Scully. Thomas? I always thought Scully was a girl. That was a TV show, wasn't it? Thomas Scully, Administrator, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. You know, they put these people in there to try to deliberately destroy these organizations. As we were discussing, Friday night, organizations that are government agencies that are doing a rather good job. Medicare is the single most efficient services delivery organization in the government, operating at something like 1% of 1% of budget cost or something like that. You know, really, really ridiculously, insanely efficient. Well, Thomas Scully was administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, and shortly after he resigned in 2003, an investigation by the Department of Health and Human Services Inspector General found that Scully had pressured the agency's actuary to underestimate the full cost of the Medicare reform bill by about $100 billion. Yeah, about $100 billion. And Raymond, how much does a candy bar cost? About $100 billion. Until after Congress passed the bill into law. Scully was the guy who went, stuck his hand in the air, swore before God and everybody what the numbers were. He was also hit with conflict of interest charges by the U.S. Attorney's Office for billing CMS, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, for expenses incurred during a job search while he still headed the agency. He settled those charges by paying $9,782. Well, I paid the fine and I picked up the garbage, and they all moved away from me on the Group W bench. You know how that works. David Smith. Jesus. It doesn't... David Smith, Deputy Assistant for Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, Interior Department, resigned July 21st, 2006... Aw, for pity's sakes, after shooting a buffalo and accepting its skeletal remains and meat as an illegal gratuity. What is America coming to when a government official can't go shoot a buffalo and get its bones and its meat as an illegal gratuity? We need to legalize freedom in America! Yeah. He eventually paid over $3,000 for the dead buffalo, but only after the internal inquiry had commenced. The Department of Interior Inspector General also noted in a May 16, 2006 report that Smith's involvement in the designation of Houston as a port of entry for imported wildlife in order to benefit a friend was, shall we say, inappropriate. Well, I had to get them musk oxen in through Houston, because otherwise it was a long ride on the boxcar from where they was importing it from China. All we had to do was bring it through the Panama Canal and up through the Gulf and right there into Houston. You know, and then I takes them off to my farm there, where I puts them behind a fence, and Dick Cheney comes and kills them. I don't see why there's anything inappropriate about that. John Tanner, Voting Rights Section Chief, Justice Department, resigned December 2007. You remember this story. Brad Friedman did a lovely job with it. And moved to the Office of Special Counsel for Immigration-Related Unfair Employment Practices. Already under suspicion for aiding efforts to politicize the voting section, the bumbling proponent of voter identification laws angered lawmakers with his comments that such laws actually discriminate against white voters because minorities die first. Even more impressive was his apology for the comment. The DOJ Office of Professional Responsibility is currently investigating his travel habits and those of his deputies. His apology? What was so special or impressive about his apology? Well, you would do well to ask. And this is sound from Congressman Arthur Davis of Alabama having a conversation with Mr. Tanner. God, I hope the video is still here. Yep, there it is. It'll be rolling along in just a second. This
is Mr. Chairman.
Here we go.
Ranking Member Franks and members of the subcommittee, thank you for the opportunity to appear before you. Let me first note that I have apologized to the National Latino Congreso for comments I made about the impact of voter identification laws on elderly and minority voters.
Because our society is such that minorities don't become elderly the way white people do. They die first. There are inequities in health care. There are a variety of inequities in this country.
My explanation of the data came across in a hurtful way, which I deeply regret. The reports of my comments do not in any way accurately reflect my career of devotion to enforcing federal laws designed to assure fair and equal access to the ballot.
You apologized at the beginning of your comments today for the statements that you made. I'm not 100% sure what you're apologizing for. I'm not sure if you're apologizing for how people read the statements or if you're apologizing for making them. So I want to give you some chance to be more specific about that. I want to read you a quote, and first of all, tell me if you said it. Quote, our society is such that minorities don't become elderly the way white people do. They die first. Did you say that?
That was part of my statement, Mr. Davis, and I welcome...
Well, I just want to ask you if you said that, and you've said that you did. Is that an accurate statement?
It is a sad fact.
And is it an accurate statement?
I believe that the census data show that life expectancy, in Georgia anyway, which is what I was addressing, is lower for African Americans.
Well, you don't say that. You say that minorities don't become elderly the way white people do. Is that accurate?
It was a very clumsy statement.
Is it an accurate statement?
I believe that I've said, Mr. Davis, I may not completely understand the question.
That's Congressman
question
Davis.
Is it accurate that minorities don't become elderly the way white people do?
The statistical data indicate that life expectancy is lower for minorities.
Then you say they die first. Who is the they?
I was addressing the sad fact that the inequities in this country are such. And I am not an expert on all of those inequities. I know that members of this committee...
Well, let me slow you down because we only have 5 minutes, and you'll have an opportunity to respond to our comments, but my time is precious. Let me ask you this. My state of Alabama, 2004 presidential election, what percentage of minorities do you think voted in that election for president, Mr. Tanner, in my state of Alabama?
I do not know the figure, and I would like to make sure before I give any information.
Do you have a ballpark guesstimate?
I don't have an estimate. I would have to...
Number was 73%. Do you happen to know what percentage of whites voted in my state in the presidential in 2004?
I also do not know that.
The number was 74%. Do you know what percentage of those minority voters were elderly in my state?
It's my belief, but I would have to check the data, that elderly voters in Alabama, many of whom I worked with, have good turnout.
Yes, elderly voters have good turnout, and in fact, minority elderly voters have very good turnout, don't they, Mr. Tanner? Just to frame this in terms of statistics, in my state of Alabama in 2004, of that 73% black voter turnout, 40% of them were over 60. That is actually a higher percentage than in the white community. So if you look at the statistics rather than your stereotypes, elderly blacks are more likely to vote than elderly whites. And I think this is... Did you also make the comment, by the way, that blacks are more likely to go to check cashing businesses at some point in Georgia? Did you make that observation?
In addressing the Georgia...
No, don't give me a long answer. I don't have the time. Did you make the comment or did you not make it?
I made a comment about that.
Okay. Now, this is the point, Mr. Tanner, that I think we want to drive home. Do you have any statistics about how many blacks visit check-cashing businesses versus the number of whites who do?
Excuse me. I do not have any with me, but I believe that such statistics about the number of unbanked persons here in the United States by race would be available through the...
Unbanked persons? I mean, there's a lot in there to scream about. I could have stopped this a lot earlier, but that was the one that hung with me when I listened to it earlier today. Unbanked persons? Shall we add them to the list of the unchurched persons? Lordy.
Office of Comptroller of the Currency.
Do you know those numbers?
I do not know the...
Well, this is the problem. Once again, you engaged in an analysis without knowing the numbers. And the point, Mr. Tanner, if I can just finish my observation, Mr. Chairman, you're a policymaker, sir. You are in charge with enforcing the voting rights laws in the country. And if you are not fully informed about things that you're talking about and pontificating about, if you're basing your conclusions on stereotypes and generalizations, that raises a question in the minds of some of us whether or not you are the person best positioned to make these choices. You said that minorities don't become elderly the way white people do. They die first, and you say, well, that was a horrible generalization on my part. You say you don't know how many minorities, how many elderly minorities vote versus the number of whites who vote who are elderly. You make observations about people going to check cashing places, and you suggest that, well, because blacks go to check cashing places, they surely must have photo ID. And then I ask you if there's a statistical basis for that. You say you don't know it. If you are basing your conclusions on stereotypes rather than facts, then it suggests to some of us that someone else can do this job better than you can.
I welcome an opportunity to address that. I did not make my decisions based on assumptions. We looked at the numbers. I had been surprised by those numbers, and I was trying to...
Did you look at numbers regarding elderly minority voter participation? Because those are the relevant numbers.
The relevant numbers, I believe, that I looked at were whether or not there were people who did not have photo ID in Georgia. And the
statistics... Did you look at numbers regarding elderly minority voter participation? And can you cite those numbers to the committee?
The data showed that everyone in Georgia, that there were more people who had the ID of all ages, all more voting age people who had the ID than there were voting age people who were eligible to have the ID.
Did you look at the percentage of elderly minority voters?
Well, the fact that he's had to ask the question four times kind of tells us that Mr. Tanner didn't. Huh. And, you know, that's a guy who, as Congressman Davis, not Mr. Davis, Congressman Davis, noted, that's a guy who, you know, made policy. And this was all about hustling this stupid Georgia photo ID voter registration law. The Department of Justice's Office of Professional Responsibility is currently investigating, as we said, his travel habits and those of his deputy. Dun, 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 dun. Sarah Taylor. See, we're not done. Deputy Assistant to the President and Director of Political Affairs at the White House, where she was Karl Rove's top aide. She resigned amidst the U.S. Attorney investigation and other probes of Rove's alleged politicization of the government. Then there's Ken Tomlinson, Board Chairman, Corporation for Public Broadcasting member, Broadcasting Board of Governors. Resigned at the release of an Inspector General report concluding he had broken laws in spending CPB money to hire politically connected consultants to search for bias without consulting the board. At Broadcasting Board of Governors, a separate investigation found he was running a horse racing operation out of his office. Oh, and banana peel slides by on the inside rail. A horse racing operation out of his office. And continuing to hire politically wired individuals to do consulting work for him. After being nominated and serving another term, he finally stepped down from that spot earlier in 2007. Mother McCree! A horse racing operation? He was making book? Out of a government office? We're not done with the list, but take any of them. And you could do a 30-minute feature on, you know, some TV news shows, but hell no, we can't do any 30-minute features on these thugs, these crooks, these petty criminals, these low-rent the Mayberry Machiavelli, the Catskill Cosa Nostra types? Oh, hell no! We've got to talk about Britney Spears dropping her baby or some such. I particularly like it that Tomlinson initiated an investigation of liberal bias. This stuff's too precious. You can't pay for this stuff. My God. Making book? Really? Making book out of... Is there nothing these sleazebags won't do? I mean, this is a pretty long darn list. How about the list of honest Bush administration officials? I dare say that we probably couldn't do any such list for the simple reason that there's nobody to put on it. Honest to Pete. Well, I'll tell you what, let's go to the phones before we go to the top of the hour news. I hate to make people wait. Hi, who have I got?
Hi, Bob.
Hey, Luke, how's it going?
Can I get $5 down on Beetle Bob to on the nose?
In the fifth at Hialeah?
You betcha.
Yeah, sure. You sure you don't want to box that thing up and go for the trifecta?
Come on, yeah. Oh gosh, it's like saying, where's Dateline? You know, forget this To Catch a Predator. Come on, guys, we got a real fun one here for you. This will keep you busy for a season.
Yeah, To Catch a Bureaucrat. And, you know, it probably would dovetail with To Catch a Predator because God knows there's some kitty diddlers in there, too.
Now, we are going to talk about Rush now. Let's not get into that, you know?
Yeah, he'll be here all week. Try the veal.
We have three shows on the Sunday and the matinee. Yes, indeedy.
Stay away from the hollandaise sauce. That stuff will kill you.
How did you enjoy the Gene Lyons thing I sent you?
Gene Lyons is, of course... why does he just labor away there in the backwoods, backwater of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette?
Other than that, he should be on.
I read Gene Lyons, and I'm reminded of people like Jack Anderson, you know?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like where Greg Palast should be. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. He should have his own 48 hours Dateline show.
Without a doubt. He's good.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is that Gene Lyons said, and pretty much in agreement with him, was the problem I have right now, but I say we got to do our early voting in about a week or two before we start early voting. And I was sitting there, you know, going through all of the different people, and, you know, if this were a different time, you know, I could vote for Barack Obama, but I'm sorry, this Kumbaya, you know, let's all sit around and sing Kumbaya and be friends with Republicans. I'm sitting there going, hello? Have you stuck your head up and seen what's going on in the world?
Fellas, snakes bite. Don't know if anybody told you, but yeah, they do. Yeah, you know, no, I know.
Well, it's the old line. What's the old line? It's out of Maltese Falcon. So was he going to kick my teeth in and then slap me for mumbling, you know?
Yeah.
It's one of those things. It's like, you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, if you're going to sit there and say, we're going to make friends with these people, it's like, wait a minute, is that after the second term? Because this first term is going to be just cleaning up, reversing all the stuff that you were listing. I mean, dear Lord, there's going to have to be purges at the Justice Department.
And that's something I've tried to point out along the way, Luke, is that we talk about all the, you know, the high-level sleazebags, but it's the right-wing... uber fundamentalist Christian dominionist reconstructionist whatever
Regent University lawyer
Patrick Henry University, and the thing is they're burrowed in like some sort of Star Trek creature deep into the soft tissue of government.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be a generation rooting those people out.
Well, you know, it's one of those stories that was not overly reported, of course. But, you know, about a year or two after the crime family arrived, the fact that there were massive retirements in a whole bunch of different places where the people who'd been the good people, you know, just civil servants, we're getting forced out. You know, sorry, you're not wanted here anymore. You've been here for 20 years.
Yeah, you're well, a little too you're a little too honest and competent. Move along now.
We have somebody here who'll stand up and say he's totally against abortion. I mean, I know that has nothing to do with your job, but he'll stand up and say it. You know, it's like all those mid-level people they had running around Iraq. You know anything about starting a new government? No, but I voted against abortion.
He's our boy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, God, I tell you. Well, I tell you what, it's top of the hour, so let me get out of here. I don't mean to take up too much time. How's things looking tonight for the game?
I'm nervous as a whore in church, but, you know, we'll be an hour into it by the time I get off the air. I think Agnes may be producing Peter a little bit so I can sneak into the living room and throw a blanket over my head and peep between the cracks in between my fingers. There's just been too much happened to the. But, you know, the team's in good spirits and everything, so, you know, maybe a little miracle will happen. Oklahoma will be overconfident. Because, after all, they did try to weasel out of playing us early on. Felt like that playing the Mountaineers was beneath the Sooners' dignity, at the bowl selection time. So, you know, maybe some of that will carry over.
Let's put it this way. Fox is carrying it. They've got Barry Switzer on talking right now. It's like, no.
Well, this will be fun. All right, Luke, you take it easy.
You take it easy.
Hey, congratulations yesterday. I was glad you guys pulled it out.
Oh, I'll tell you what. That's okay. We were sitting there last night, sitting there trying to watch the Michigan-Florida game. We're sitting there going, I'm pulling for the SEC teams about as close as I can go.
Yeah. Yep. I understand.
All right.
Have a good one, Luke.
You too.
Bye now.
Bye.
Our good friend Luke in or near the home of the Tennessee Volunteers, Knoxville, Tennessee. So we'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice, America's listener-supported Liberal Voice. We'll talk about that maybe when we come out of the news. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. The Federal Reserve may decide to cut interest rates one more time. Recorded minutes from their recent meeting suggest Fed officials will consider another cut to help offset a possible recession. Presidential candidates in Iowa are furiously making the last-minute rounds to grab as many votes as they can in tomorrow's state caucus. For Democrats, it is a statistical dead heat for the primary win. On the Republican side, Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney are tied, with third place shared by John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and Fred Thompson. Federal prosecutors will investigate the destruction of CIA videotapes showing agents interrogating terrorism suspects. Attorney General Michael Mukasey announced that the Justice Department will try to determine whether any laws were broken. An inquiry found that there is sufficient evidence to pursue possible criminal charges. The state of California is suing the federal government over greenhouse gas limits on vehicles, challenging the White House assertion that states have no business setting emission standards. Several other states are expected to join the lawsuit, filed today in the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco. A prisoner who overpowered four guards, took their weapons, and escaped from a hospital in suburban Washington, D.C., has been shot to death by Maryland State Police during their attempt to recapture him. The 45-year-old convict was serving life in prison for kidnap, hijacking, and robbery. In North Carolina, at least 50 people were injured after a Greyhound bus crashed into a big rig and then plunged over an embankment. The bus was traveling between Richmond, Virginia, and Raleigh. Most of the injuries are moderate, but two bus passengers were airlifted to hospitals with serious injuries. Driver fatigue is the possible cause of another bus crash in Texas that killed one passenger and injured dozens. The driver could possibly face criminal charges in connection with that accident. Hours after Pakistan's Election Commission announced a six-week delay in the parliamentary vote, the party of assassinated former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto announced it will take part in the February 18th elections. A team of British investigators from Scotland Yard heading now to Pakistan to investigate Bhutto's death. President Pervez Musharraf announced he requested that investigation. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Business news just ahead.
Remember when the name on the door said it all? In today's world, it's the website that defines a company's image. For better or worse, a company's presence on the internet is a vital factor in how it keeps existing customers and attracts new clients. Byte Technology of Monterey is a leader in a new approach to web design. Byte designs a new site based on the mission, purpose, character, and indeed the energy of their clients. Byte is particularly successful in presenting their client's name to the global internet community because they approach the design with a clear, defined process. By fully understanding the client's business, motivation, and operation, they are able to translate the company's critical values into the new website. In addition to original design, Byte works with clients to update their website to reflect changes in target markets, products and services, and the business climate. Byte Technology. See what they're about at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Villagers and tourists are fleeing an erupting volcano in southern Chile. The volcano began spewing ash and lava last night. Authorities are trying to evacuate more than 50 people stranded inside a nearby national park. Unusually cold temperatures in Florida have citrus farmers scrambling to save their crops. The state's governor has lifted restrictions on commercial vehicles to facilitate moving harvested crops to processing plants. The former Daimler Chrysler hit with the largest fine ever assessed against any company for violating fuel economy standards set by the U.S. government. Now, the more than $30 million fine was levied for imported passenger cars from 2006. For the third straight year, Atlanta's international airport is the busiest in the country. Atlanta logged more than 994,000 flights last year. That's up 1.8% from 2006. Chicago's O'Hare Airport has the second highest number of flights. Dallas-Fort Worth is third. Light sweet crude oil currently trading at $99.62 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold trading at $860 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average sunk 221 points to end at 13,043. NASDAQ down 42 points. The S&P 500 off 21. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Alrighty then. First show of a so-called new year, and I'm feeling pretty good about it. Needed that little break. That little, because the break for Christmas wasn't a break. But this was. This was. A lot of cooking yesterday, but still a good little bit of a break. For the sports-minded in the audience, and for the non-sports-minded, for that matter, I sent an email out to ELO from the chat room, as well as our good buddy Guy James, about something that I heard just sort of by happenstance yesterday watching the Michigan-Florida game. And this will appeal to you non-sports people, so just hang in with me for a minute. You know, during the halftime show, they cut away, you know, to the guys at the Rose Bowl. Well, you know, Illinois might have a chance, blah, 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 yada, yada, yada. Let's go back to the stadium. Okay, so they go back to the stadium, and they cut in the audio from the University of Michigan marching band for, you know, maybe 30 seconds. And I certainly couldn't last long on Name That Tune, but there are a few out there that are pretty easy to pick up. And they came in right at the beginning of the musical phrase, and the Michigan marching band, I kid you not, at a bowl game on New Year's Day in Florida, was playing Springtime for Hitler. I'm not joking. I am so not joking. And I just said, what are you people thinking? Of course, you got to understand, I hold the University of Michigan in pretty low esteem these days, considering what they did to my beloved Mountaineers with both our football and our basketball coach. Not that I think that a university is a life support system for an athletic department, but, you know, you get the idea. But really, the Michigan marching band was playing Springtime for Hitler. I'm surprised Abraham Foxman hasn't, like, you know, put out a fatwa against them or something. But really? Springtime for Hitler? I kid you not. Let's go to the phones. Haven't heard from our good friend Spike in a while. Hey, Spike.
Well, Gonzo, greetings. Oh, I guess somewhere in South America right now it is springtime for Hitler. So,
you know, or his kids, you know.
South America stuff.
You know, down on the Bush family ranch in Paraguay or something.
Yeah, exactly.
They celebrate every April 22nd down there.
Well,
20th or whatever, yeah.
I guess they knew they'd get a free pass and don't want anyone to remember from their season this year would be losing to a Division II team. Although, granted, the way the media made it sound was like it was a bad Division II team. It's actually one of the best Division II teams in the history of the
Well, they just three-peated, didn't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they beat Lafayette a few times in the past few years in the playoffs. I've seen them, but they're a team that could beat a lot of Division I-A teams. They easily could have beat some even better teams than Michigan this year. A lot of pros come out of that division of football. People write it off like it's 40, 50 years ago. That division of football these days has some great talent and some real just good coaches down there.
And one could argue they have a certainly more verifiable system of finding out who's the best in the league that year. They call it a playoff.
They certainly won't have any years like 93 where somehow Florida State became the champions because they beat Boston College and Notre Dame lost to them, and yet Notre Dame beat Florida State. I still think that might be simply the most pathetic season in Division I-A history. Lou Holtz got the short end of the shaft there, as he did to Steve Spurrier in South Carolina.
And if it had been anybody but Lou Holtz, I would have felt bad about it. But
I like Lou Holtz.
We will agree to disagree on that.
So I guess I'm starting to see the different brainwaves we sit on. But the Iowa caucus coming up. The first thing I said when I wished everyone a happy new year is happy 2008. It's officially a presidential election year, finally. It feels like we've been in a presidential election year for about 3 years now.
Yeah, it's like being lost in a canebrake, Spike.
Yeah, and finally now we're actually in the year where things are going to happen. And I got really excited when I saw the Reuters, Zogby, C-SPAN, I'm sure someone else has their name in it, poll today, this morning on C-SPAN, that showed a dead heat with Clinton, Obama, and Edwards only 2 points back, which officially means that the polls that shows that they have no clue who's going to win, which is good because, you know, polls are highly inaccurate. Just ask Howard Dean from 4 years ago.
Yeah, of course, yeah, I'm admittedly paranoid, and I believe that, speaking of horse races a little bit ago, I think that was a boat race and the fix was in.
Oh, yeah. Considering, I forget what his name is at Fox News. He used to call John Kerry the only reasonable Democrat running until John Kerry got the nomination. So, I mean, if that isn't a telling tale who the right wanted to run, and I mean, we couldn't have had a more mumbling, bumbling, horrific candidate than John Kerry. I mean, it was terrible to say the least.
This administration has become an Orwellian organization.
Yeah.
Let me tell you about my vision for America.
Then his attempt at stand-up some time ago, and he did a butcher job. The only thing he's really accomplished, I think, in about 15 years, is he got the Patriots game on national television. And I was really hoping they would I thought for sure they'd lose then because John Kerry got a victory for them.
Yeah, kiss of death.
Yeah, if he's behind them, they're going to lose. And they probably will lose in the playoffs anyways. But, yeah, I guess ultimately letting everyone down kind of like he did 4 years ago. I really wish I had a drummer here to
put him those
lines for me. Yeah. But I got to say, I'm really I hope I don't become Lewis Black here because you'll have to dump my call. What's wrong with Dennis Kucinich lately? He's back in Obama now?
I got confused, Spike, because I heard earlier today that he'd thrown his support to Edwards.
Which would make more sense.
Which is what he did in 2004, and I didn't have a problem with it.
And they certainly have a much more similar message. I mean, back in Obama, I mean, why not just back Hillary and get it over? Why not back Ron Paul and get it over with? I mean...
Oh, no, you just gave me a dead shiver on that one. But then again, you know, he came out a while back and said he'd love to have Ron Paul for a running mate.
Yeah, well, maybe. You know, the strange thing is, we have a couple of people that come into my shop that are, like, diehard listeners to, like, liberal talk radio and stuff, and they're all about Ron Paul now. It's like...
Oh, no, somebody snuck him the Kool-Aid.
Yeah, I think so, The Kool-Aid's too low octane, maybe for my liking. It's hard to sucker me in with it. But
there are a lot of them out there. I've seen it all over the place. Now, granted, Ron Paul is getting dissed on New Hampshire debate. Fox just said, you know, the trailer's too small, Mr. Paul, and we can't have you in here. Yeah, I think he does shake up the Republican elite because he talks about, he talks about some stuff that I like, but then. I get, about 15 seconds, I get past the stuff I like, and I start, wandering into the land of insanity. And I, no. And
yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, I, as much as I'm very often disagree with my, I like Pat Buchanan. But, yeah, it's the same ultimately. I wouldn't really campaign for him for president. Certainly that party needs their old-timers to slightly take it over, because
And for all the please be in mind, bear in mind, Spike, for all the talk of Ron Paul, the guy can't muster. You talk about people like to say this about Kucinich, and it's frustrating. Well, it's equally applicable to Ron Paul. He can't muster double-digit interest in his campaign. Now, he has raised a boatload of money, comparatively speaking, but because people look at him and go, wow, he wants out of the Iraq War. That makes sense. And then, but he wants to kill Social Security? Huh? What? What?
Exactly. That's the stuff that worries me about him.
You know, that's the thing. Libertarianism is, was, and always has been Republican. It's the Republican Party for Republicans who smoke pot.
Yeah, and go to dead shows. Lots of former, deadheads that toured with the dead, big-time libertarians now.
Yeah,
I certainly... Other than maybe the smoking pot part, there's not too much on the libertarian ticket I'm very in agreement with. I'll tell you one thing, though, is I really love how bad Giuliani has taken a nosedive recently. Nothing amuses me more than that. I mean, I just love it because being from the Northeast and living in the middle between the Philly and New York media market where I get both cities, TV and papers, Nothing has amused me more than for a while him being the ultimate American hero, you know, or the greatest American hero, like the old ABC show.
Oh, now that thing's stuck in my head, Spike. Stop it. Believe it or not. No, make it go away. Yeah.
Maybe someone could Photoshop him in that red suit that William Catt used to wear. That'd be a good picture. But, I'm glad people are finally finding out he's a bumbling idiot. I mean, a lot of firefighters died because of his incompetence, and God knows if you put him in charge of a military, what'll happen. So it's good to see him take a nosedive at least. I mean, the worst thing could have been him and Hillary in the general election. I mean, that would have been a news festival for people around the country to hang themselves to. So luckily, at least, he's out of it. Well, soon enough, I'm sure. Hopefully, he'll be out of it. I just hope.
Yeah, but does Iowa put paid to Senator Clinton's candidacy? I don't think so, personally.
You know, I think the best thing is I saw the three different TV ads. They're saturating tonight. And Clinton's was filled with lots of half truths and outright lies about her resume, essentially. Obama's was just trying to be up. Key and smiling a lot and looking handsome, and Edwards didn't even appear in his own. He had a former Maytag worker who's been very vocal behind his campaign in the ad, and talking about when he lost his job in 04 and Edwards, and it was actually normal when they try to make heartfelt ads, they're pretty blatantly transparent, and you just look at them and cringe. Ugh, how phony politics is it? This one actually made me feel almost teary-eyed watching it because I sympathize because I'm basically kind of dealing with the same problem. You know, I'm about to potentially fall in the financial ruin and have to move back into my parents' house like George Costanza. I mean, the economy is in shambles. And
it's not going to get any better. There's not going to be any miracle that turns... See, remember when the right-wingers gave Clinton so much help? Well, you know, the Clinton economy is nothing but a... it's nothing but blue smoke and mirrors based on the tech bubble and the dot-com bubble, and it's not real, it's fake, you know. It's what the hell did the housing market bubble turn out to be? Dummied up economy based on the ginned up, phonied up mortgages.
Yeah, I mean, now the only thing they have to brag about is the bogus statistics they give every 6 months, which by the way would be summer and Christmas. Where they talk about how great the job market is because they count the part-time jobs people have at KB during Christmas, or, you know, scooping for Rita's Ice. And they talk about that like that's a good thing people have all those jobs.
Well, remember, the Bush administration did try to reclassify burger flippers as industrial jobs, manufacturing jobs.
Yeah, or their very infamous thing where they predict a much larger deficit than they're capable of having. And then when it turns out to be lower than their projected numbers, they go, oh, look, it's better than we projected. The economy is doing great. And the economy is doing horrible. They just cooked the books and created a highball number that no one could reach, almost in a way like how bookies do the point spread for football games. And then when everyone loses, they go, oh, yeah, we're winners. We're doing great. We're not doing great. We're doing horrible right now. I mean...
Yeah, and like bookies, they're in the middle of a game where they can't get the money right.
I'm 28 years old, and I can clearly say while I was young during the Reagan years, I do remember some hard times for my parents as a young kid. I really just don't remember it being this pathetically bad in America like it is today. And basically, as long as globalization exists, there's no turning back for us. We're just going to keep up the race to the bottom. And it's just a shame that we all have to have lead shoes on. Just sink to the bottom of the sea because that's what the one percenters want. And sadly, it's not even the cool one percenters who ride bikes and break the law. It's the one percenters who wear white collars and break the law that this is all happening for, which is even less sexy.
Yeah, the right wing money nerds.
Yeah, I mean, essentially, that's who's really running this country into the ground, is 1% of the population.
Well, if I can find it here real quick, Spike, you've reminded me of something. And because I saw a story before we ended, before we ended programming for last year, and it just blew me away. having to, because we had talked a few nights before that about this $68 million bonus that the head of Goldman Sachs got for essentially losing money. You know, God knows if he'd made money, they probably would have given him a $150 million Christmas bonus. but the guy, you know, lost money hand over fist. And I ran across a diary entry at Daily Kos that mentioned some of the other excesses of the corporate crony class.
Okay.
And I'm waiting for the darn thing to load. My computer has slowed to a crawl. There it is. There it is. This is some work done by Michelle Leder over at footnoted.org. And she's got some fascinating finds about the way the corporate executive level cronies behave. Let's see. This is a good one. The CEO of Quest Communications, who has recently been selected by the Democratic National Committee for telecom services at the convention this summer. The CEO of Quest had it in his contract that his daughter got to use the corporate jet to travel to school.
Jeez, where in the world is she going to school?
You know, it's like that old joke about what do you get when you cross an elephant and a rhino. Elephino. But let's see. Then there's the CEO who got commuting expenses so he could live in Maine while company offices were in Dallas. That was a $949,000 outlay to the company.
Boy, and I thought it was the...
Oh, but wait, it gets better. This is a Gensu commercial, Spike. The company was on the road to collapse.
Gee. Yeah, I guess we know what the nail in their coffin was.
$949,000. You know, you're getting that kind of money, suffer quietly and live in Dallas. Or, yeah. You know, take a helicopter ride from Austin. I hear Austin's nice.
Yeah, it's not like they, you know, Texas is like basically like Maryland, where it's all built up and there is no country section. Half the state's still rural, like Maine would be.
Yeah. Speaking of the housing bubble, there's Countrywide. Remember when you used to be bombarded with Countrywide ads every time you turned on the electric TV box?
Yeah, or for many early years of the internet, emails as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Countrywide gave its new chief operating officer a promotion bonus right as it was heading into the tank. It cost the stockholders $2.62 million. I mean, it's just amazing, this kind of stuff. Let's see, the Morgan's Hotel Group, he signed on for $750,000 a year salary, but the stockholders gave him a housing allowance of $30,000 a month.
About 3 months, you could own my house. That's nice.
Yeah. I mean, and $30,000 a month?
Yeah.
I mean, granted, he's in Manhattan, and I know that property's tough there, but what do you get for $30,000 a month in Manhattan? Somebody, you know, one of our New York listeners can tell me. Oh, hell, you can tell me, Spike. You've probably got a pretty good idea. What's 30 large a month get you on what, Central Park West?
I'm figuring you would easily have the top floor. You might have Paris Hilton living the floor below you for $30,000 a month. That's a bigger rent. $30,000. Well, geez, Louise, I'm lucky to make that in a year.
Year? Two?
Yeah, you know, at least. But they're running these companies into the ground, and somehow our tax dollars are bailing some of these companies out. And then, of course, then they don't have the funds there for things we really need, like healthcare, or even better than healthcare, perhaps appropriate armor for the troops.
Now there you go talking crazy again, Spike.
Yeah, well, heaven forbid we should throw them into a landmine or a improvised explosive infested territory and actually have something that'll keep their Hummer from blowing into a million pieces when it gets hit. How I'm not gray or bald at this point from these past 8 years is because it's a good reason to wear a hat. It keeps you from grabbing at your hairs and pulling them right out of your head when you hear these things.
But even so, I mean, you get a sense of relief that, you know, our long national nightmare is almost over. But that, Spike, isn't that predicated on the notion that we think we're going to get a Democrat in the White House?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if we, well, first of all, we get Hillary Clinton, we're guaranteed another 4 years of Republican, regardless of which party wins. But especially, actually, for the Republican Party, if she gets the nomination, because they have been waiting so long to run against her, and they have so much material to use against her, we'll be guaranteed we won't have a Democrat in the White House, regardless of which party wins, if she gets the nomination. Yeah, I'm sure the smear machines will sway a lot of idiots in this country.
But I see what I'm getting at, though, Spike. I'm not convinced that it's a slam dunk, lead pipe cinch, Colonel Mustard in the conservatory, sure thing that the Democrats win in 08. I'm not trying to be, you know, a nattering nabob of negativity or anything, but these guys have a machine that we haven't even begun to contemplate.
Yeah, but not to mention too. I mean, it doesn't help that we have Nancy Pelosi and some of these prominent Democrats who, when they took control, talked really big, and they haven't delivered on those promises, which in turn isn't going to bode well come the general election, because that'll just add to the negativity from people in their own party towards the party leading up to that election, where they might not vote or participate, and that would only further put the hands in the power of the radical few. And that's the other thing. I mean, the House and the Senate, they got to do their job leading up to this presidential. If they want someone from their party elected, they got to earn it. And that's going to be the problem, too, is too many of them are starting to think now, well, because of Bush, we'll just win everything. And, you know, I guess they forgot 4 years ago they had that theory and they didn't win.
Oh, 1999. I remember people looking at George W. Bush and saying, no way the American people are stupid enough to put this goober in office. He's a moron.
Yeah, let alone reelect him. Yeah, well, that didn't turn out as everyone predicted. Yeah, when you get cocky and you think you got something wrapped up, you usually don't. And I think that's exactly what's about to happen to the Democratic Party if they don't wake up a little bit and vote for the right values, not just for the name that the libertarian-dominated TV media keeps throwing out there. Which, by the way, maybe another aspect of the media's pimping so hard of Hillary Clinton and Obama, but especially Hillary. Look at the people who are busy carrying on about that race. They clearly have an agenda. They don't have to be at Fox News. Just the libertarians.
Look, if you can make a two-horse race out of it, it gets easy and cheap, and therefore all the campaign money that comes in is pure gravy. You got one reporter covering Senator Clinton, you got another reporter covering Senator Obama, and you don't have to worry about the common, decent, good sense that's being talked about by people like Biden or Dodd or Kucinich or Edwards.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I think we can formulate a theorem here, Spike, that American media, the American media behavior will be determined by a lowest common denominator sort of calculus.
Yeah, yeah. Whether it's lead, sensationalism, or for that matter, just the quickest, the shortest. You know, especially on TV.
And biggest bang for the buck.
Biggest bang, yeah. Because in TV, they're just going to try to give you a whole story in 30 seconds. At least in the print media, there's plenty of papers who devote a lot of room to every story, and they have to give you more than just a quick rundown. And although, sadly, 74% of this country gets their news exclusively from television, which essentially means that most of this country is extremely inadequately informed, that was tougher than I thought it would be to say, on the issues that really affect Americans the most. I mean, I guarantee you, there's still a ridiculous number of idiots who come the general election are going to be convinced that the, quote, illegal immigration thing is the biggest story.
Oh, God.
Because that's what they're going to see over and over and over nonstop on the cable infotainment channels. And then,
by the way, a quick update, a little bit more information I just found. You know the CEO who flies his daughter to school on the company jet?
Okay.
You know, it's easy to see something like that spying and say, well, you know, okay, maybe they live on the East Coast and, you know, she flies to Stanford. You know, that'd kind of make sense, at least in a sort of twisted crony capitalist kind of way, wouldn't it? You know, we're not going to make her take the Greyhound. Right?
Yeah.
This is his stepdaughter, and he flies her to high school.
I guess traffic must be atrocious in that town.
in that half of the globe, I mean, Jiminy.
You know,
yeah, high school, stepdaughter, private jet.
I wish someone could have been flying me on a private jet in and out of Jersey when I used to work there to avoid that traffic out there. But,
well, you know, dig it. They actually managed to run that charlatan, that huckster, that snake oil salesman, Richard Roberts, out of his personal satrapy at Oral Roberts University over him sending his daughter for spring break to the Bahamas on the ORU private jet, right? What does that tell you about the status of American corporate ethics? American corporate ethics are lower than that of a tent revivalist. Let that swim around inside your skull for a minute. Oh, man. No wonder we're in trouble.
Yeah, ooh, lots of snake oil salesmen have made it to the top of the corporate ladder these days. Well, we'll see. We're seeing what happens when you put too many fibbers and con artists in supreme power. And, eventually when it's the second Great Depression, and we can brag in American history how when everyone thought there would never be another Great Depression, there was one. Kind of, I guess, making the first depression the depression to end all depressions. And maybe at least then we'll remember why people in the early 20th century created all these regulations and laws and policies that since the 1980s and Reaganism have been deregulated and thrown away. And it's almost like we're back to 1890 again in this country. I mean, essentially the message that the socialists had in the late 1800s, early 20th century, it's like word for word again. It's the exact same struggles. It's the exact same greed and problems. He who fails to learn history is destined to repeat it. And unfortunately, this country has proven that exactly right. And I can't get over how horrifically downward spiral we're heading. And most people are too entertained and too in la la land to notice this. I didn't realize Dancing with the Stars would hold people that far away from reality. They would forget about what's really happening in real life and what's really wrong in this country.
Well, I quoted your hero earlier this evening, Spike. Big darkness soon come.
Yeah, well, Hillary Clinton and Obama, they've certainly been crowd pleasers. And of course, one of the greatest political lines he's ever had was Fear and Loathing the Campaign Trail 72, where he said, the problem with crowd pleasers is generally they're brainless swine who go out on stage and whoop the crowd up into an orgastic frenzy and then go back to the office and sell every one of the poor bastards down the tube for a nickel apiece. And I hope people remember that in this primary season about some of these crowd pleasers.
Yeah, indeed. Spike, awful good to hear from you, man.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely good to have a chance to listen to you again for a first time in a while.
Well, so. Don't be such a stranger, okay? I mean, I know you're out there working for a living and stuff, but, I mean, you got to have some priorities, man.
Yeah. Between Wednesday night council and all that, working at night and stuff like that, it's been kind of rough keeping a live schedule of the show. So take you and everyone down there in West Virginia, and hopefully things will work out for the Mountaineers there.
I'm hoping so. I'm getting good news out of the good news out of the chat room right now. Apparently we're putting good pressure on that Sam Bradford guy, the quarterback for Oklahoma. So, fingers are crossed.
That's cool.
All right, take it easy, Spike.
You too.
Bye now. Wow, he gets to the hang-up button quicker than I do. I got a couple of things here that I want to sort of wrap the evening up with, if you don't mind, because it's one of those examples of sort of the holy Moses factor with regard to American media and perhaps with regard to our inability to sort of get the job done the way the other side does. I don't want to be like a pig licking, but I think there are lessons we can learn. And in particular, I'm, you know, it was right around the middle of the Clinton presidency. And way back in that time, I spent a lot of time on the road. I spent a lot of time behind the wheel. And therefore, because I have this sort of gawking at a slow-moving train wreck fascination with right-wing hate radio, I would go down the road, headed for here, there, and yonder, listening to Flush Flimball, because he was the only game in town. There was no liberal talk radio, and you know, maybe once in a while I'd be out late at night on the way home and I'd get to tune in WLS and catch a little bit of Malloy. But mostly it was daytime and mostly it was Flimball. And I remember it seemed like years, where every blessed time I turned on the radio, I would hear Flush Flimball waxing what was apparently back then quite addictedly about Bill Clinton giving away our technology secrets, and usually it was my friends, Bill Clinton has given away our missile technologies to his friends, the Chi-Coms. Meaning, you know, China. So I see this headline out of the New York Times today. Doubts raised on technology sales to China. Reading straight off the copy. Somewhere I gotta get that sound. I gotta get that teletype sound effect in the background. Six months ago, the Bush administration quietly eased some restrictions on the export of sensitive technologies to China. The new approach was intended to help American companies increase sales of high-tech equipment to China despite tight curbs on sharing technology that might have military applications. Now, you see, back when it was Bill Clinton and the L'Oreal Corporation, Flush Flimball would have made it sound like Bill Clinton personally went out and, you know, found the premier of China and said, Would you fellas like to have some missile technology? And, you know, you saw bumper stickers, you know, there's a traitor in the White House, that kind of stuff, you know. Now there really is a draft dodger in the White House, but, you know, not so much. Today the administration is facing questions from weapons experts about whether some equipment newly authorized for export to Chinese companies deemed trustworthy by Washington could instead end up helping China modernize its military. Equally worrisome, the weapons experts say, is the possibility that China could share the technology with, oh, wait for it, Iran or Syria. The technologies include advanced aircraft engine parts, navigation systems, telecommunications equipment, and sophisticated composite materials. No, really. They have, and they did. So, you won't hear Flush Flimball talking about George W. Bush selling us out to the Chi-Coms, my friend! Oh, no. No, no, no. Now they're the good Chi-Coms, and we don't have any problem with it in the world. Missile technologies. Composite materials. You know, the stuff that the radar can't see. That's just charming, isn't it? Hi, welcome to the program. Who've I got?
You got me, man.
Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Same old. Well, I'm not the same old. I don't know how many people know, but the strike's over.
Oh, yes.
The nurses' strike is over. And although everybody's not happy, I believe that they did the right move in approving this new contract, even though it only won by, I believe, 42 votes. Their union is intact, which wasn't the way this began. The successor clause is back in the contract. which is the clause that says if ARH ever sells the hospital, they have to sell it to somebody that's willing to recognize the union. Their seniority is back. Their holiday pay is back. They have a choice of whether they'll work 36 or 36.48. The difference being 36 is you agree you'll work 3/12. If you agree to 36.48, 1 week you work 3/12, the next week you work 4/12. And these women are, and I say women, and there are men involved, but the majority of them are women, and, well, that's where the credit lies as far as I'm concerned. They're brave, they're determined, and they've accomplished a hell of a thing. They beat back, you know, one of the larger union-busting firms in this country. They beat back Smith & Smith lawyers from Kentucky, which are anti-union, well,
thugs.
No good, blah, 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 blahs. And they kicked the hell out of ARH, man. I mean, they whipped their ass. And, well, I'm extremely proud of them, and we need more people like that to,
to continue the...
To continue to fight. And that's what I told them. I went to one local, and I was the vote counter. Or one of the... There were two of us, and, you know, but it's supposedly... I can't say neutral because I'm certainly not.
No.
But I don't belong to their union, I guess, you know.
Right.
Best way to describe it. And what I told them before the vote is, you know, you by approving this contract, which I was for, because I know where they came from and where they ended up, you know. The original document, which was 73 pages that those... that ARH and these lawyers and these yes and union busting people handed them, it could have been reduced to one page that says, we can do whatever we want, sign here, because that's basically what the contract was. All those things that I mentioned they got back were gone, and now they have them back. And, you know, I told them, you're not giving up or quitting the fight for good patient care and adequate staffing and all those things. All you're doing is moving the fight back inside where it's warm, dry, and then one of the nurses says, and we get paid. And I said, that's exactly right.
You really can't overestimate that we get paid part of it.
No, you can't. You know, those men and women stood out there for 83 days and faced, you know, adversities that would make many people cringe. And I think it's a wonderful, well, it's a wonderful accomplishment. And I'm proud to be, have been some help to it. It's a wonderful thing. So I'm mad at Dennis Kucinich.
Yeah, this business with Obama.
Yeah, I mean,
I read it today, and I couldn't figure it. I
couldn't either. I mean, that was very disappointing. Yeah, you know,
all I can figure, Wayne, is that this somehow or another is a matter of triangulation into trying to
get a cabinet post.
No, trying to because the way the caucuses work. You don't just go in, sign the ballot, and leave.
No, if your guy don't get 15%, you got to switch.
Yeah, you redo and redo and redo. So I'm guessing right. This has something to do with trying to add to taking away from Hillary. Does that make any sense? Rather than have it, but
no,
I don't know.
I mean, you could take away from Hillary by going to Edwards.
Yeah, that I know, and that's what makes me think that there's something here that doesn't smell right, and I don't know what it is.
I don't know. I was very upset at that. You know, I mean, you know, many unions have endorsed Edwards. My, you know, carpenters have endorsed Edwards.
Oh, and Obama's
workers, the steel workers.
SEIU.
SEIU. You know.
And frankly, Obama's been given a bunch of hell to Edwards over the fact that a 527 labor group from the SEIU has been running ads in Iowa saying that Edwards was the better candidate on health care and middle-class working issues, which
well,
he is.
Because he is. Exactly. I mean, what's Obama's health? Part of his health plan is that the insurance companies have to be involved. No, they don't. You know, they have to be excluded. When you come up with a plan, then you go to them and say, if you want to insure these people, here's what we'll pay. You can't pick and choose. You know, there's no preconditioned.
Well, precisely, because, Wayne, we've had 8 years of letting insurance companies and banking companies and investment houses and oil companies and polluters write the legislation. It hasn't worked out so well for the middle and lower class. It just hasn't.
No, it has not. No, it has not.
So, you know, I'm where you are. I don't want the insurance companies on the front end of writing any health care legislation.
No, you don't get a seat at the table, pal. You know, I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll give it a courtesy when we come out. You'll be the first we'll tell what we've decided.
Yeah, you know.
And
it's not even so much a seat at the table, Wayne. It's asking them to take their front feet out of the trough.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And, you know, this is, you know, well, the insurance industry, the oil industry, the airlines, the da-da-da. Corporate America has to be regulated again, you know. And the first thing I'd do if I was president is, and guess what, you're not a citizen anymore either.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. But anyway, that was disappointing to see.
It was, and it'll be interesting to see what kind of a shakeout it has tomorrow. Hey, Wayne, we're out of time, brother.
All right, listen, Edwards is will win Iowa caucus.
I hope he does.
That's my prediction.
It's not going to be Kucinich, okay. So I hope it is Edwards.
Yeah, it's not going to be Kucinich.
No,
it's
not.
All right, brother.
All right, take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Bye now.
Bye.
That's it. I feel like that's a pretty doggone good show to get the so-called new year started with. I hope you feel the same way. Thanks to our IT consultant, Peter Godbold, on his way with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program, Strictly Confidential, coming up in a matter of minutes. Thanks to John Fox in Sydney, Australia, our chief engineer and all-around the genius guy who will, I assume, be coming along with All Foxed Up later in the evening. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk. Sincerely, if you appreciate what goes on here, you appreciate Ben Birch and WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Presidential candidates in Iowa are busy making the last-minute rounds to grab as many votes as they can in tomorrow's state caucus. For Democrats, it is a statistical dead heat for the primary win. On the Republican side, Mike Huckabee and Mitt Romney are tied, with third place shared by John McCain, Rudy Giuliani, and Fred Thompson. Federal prosecutors will investigate the destruction of CIA videotapes showing agents interrogating terrorism suspects. Attorney General Michael Mukasey announced that the Justice Department will try to determine whether any laws were broken. An inquiry found that there is sufficient evidence to pursue possible criminal charges. The state of California is suing the federal government over greenhouse gas limits on vehicles, challenging the White House assertion that states have no business setting emission standards. Several other states are expected to join the suit, filed in the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco today. In North Carolina, at least 50 people were injured after a Greyhound bus crashed into a big rig, then plunged over an embankment. The bus was traveling between Richmond, Virginia, and Raleigh. Most of the injuries are moderate, but two bus passengers were airlifted to hospitals with serious injuries. Kenya continues to burn as international pressure mounts for an investigation into the recent contested presidential election. The death toll in the rioting has topped 300. Meantime, Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice is making a round of diplomatic telephone calls to Kenyan leaders, prodding them to put a stop to that violence. Two humanitarian aid health workers kidnapped in Somalia last week have been released. The doctor and nurse are said to be unharmed. Villagers and tourists are fleeing from an erupting volcano in southern Chile. The volcano began spewing ash and lava last night. Authorities are trying to evacuate more than 50 people stranded inside a nearby national park. More than a foot of snow was dumped in southeast Michigan on New Year's Day, closing roads and airports. Some areas in Michigan and Ohio remain without power today. Unusually cold temperatures in Florida have citrus farmers scrambling to save their crops. The state's governor has lifted restrictions on commercial vehicles to facilitate moving harvested crops to processing plants. You are listening to the Quality News Network. We'll check business right after this message.
Want to start off the new year with a global internet presence but confused by all the ads for websites? Let Carmel.com and Boulevard's New Media give your business the gift of an internet page and internet advertising without all the worries. Get the results you want from internet advertising. Carmel.com provides the production graphics, designs, and writes your own unique web page. We brand your own logo and link global visitors to your page on Carmel.com. And we optimize your brand in all of our top city.com sites. We offer free toll-free numbers that connect direct to your phone line, free booking engines for hotels and inns. And we offer low monthly rates for retail and service businesses with all of your production costs free. So why wait another year for a web page? Give your business the benefits of Carmel.com's internet advertising with your free web page. Call us at 831-624-8889 or email contact at Carmel.com.